We'll be convening an executive session with the city attorney to discuss potential litigation. We expect to reconvene tonight's meeting at approximately 7:30. So we could go around the table and identify ourselves for the record, please.
Jay Arnold.
John Pascal.
Kurt Triplett.
John Cavanaugh.
Paul Stewart.
Eric Shields.
Angela Ruggieri.
Joel Funt.
Eric Law Liberty.
Penny Sweet.
Dave Asher.
Doreen Marchioni.
And Councilmember Nixon will be absent this evening. We're very, very grateful to have the chair and vice chair of the Planning Commission and the Houghton Community Council with us. Thank you, gentlemen. City Manager.
Okay, thank you. I'll be very brief. So tonight's study session is to get an update on the Planning Commission recommendations for the Houghton Everest Neighborhood Center, as well as the Houghton Community Council thoughts and comments as well. And so we'll be going over those and over the places where they agree and disagree. And there's no decisions tonight, but we're looking for direction from the council on things you like, additional information you might need, or other issues you want us to explore over the next couple weeks as we try to put together a final package to bring back to the council in the future. So here to kick us off is our planning director, Eric Shields.
Well, I'm just going to be very brief and say this has all been a long and interesting study that we've been going through. And we're happy to have this nearing conclusion, we hope. And to start it off tonight, Chair of our Planning Commission, Eric, is going to give a little intro, I guess, of the Planning Commission's thoughts. And then we're going to turn it over to Angela, who's going to take us through a description, really, of what the recommendations are. And along the way, we do have both the Planning Commission's recommendations and Houghton's recommendations as well. So you can take a look at those.
All right. I'll let Angela tackle the details, but I want to talk about the work we've done to date and how we got here. Our first study session on this was almost a year ago. It was on June 23rd of last year. We had six study sessions. I believe all of them were, if maybe the exception of one, were joint study sessions with the Houghton Community Council. So we've worked in partnership with them to try to stay on the same track to the extent possible. The majority of the commission, and I believe all of the Houghton Community Council, attended the community workshop that was in November of last year, which was very well attended, and we heard a lot from the community at that. We had a public hearing recently that over 200 people attended. It's spilled out into the back there, and then I even looked over, and there were people looking in through that window at one point. There were 42 people who gave public comment. We received hundreds of emails and other written submissions. So the commission's recommendation that we're presenting to you today is shaped by our collective expertise on some of these issues and by what we heard from the community. And in working in consultation with the Houghton Community Council. After the public hearing, we deliberated over it took us two meetings to make this recommendation. So a lot of thought went into this. What we heard from the community was overwhelmingly concerned about the impact that additional density would have on this neighborhood. There was in particular, the concern was over traffic and the backups at the light there. The focus of the community was on height, and I think largely as a proxy for density. But because of that, we have limited, as you'll see in our recommendation, the height is limited to 35 feet, and that is only if certain conditions are met that provide the benefits that we heard from the community that they wanted to see. The comments that we did hear in favor of proposals for change talked about a desire to have a more walkable, a safer neighborhood center. And the conditions that we placed upon going up to 35 feet were in an effort to try to create those conditions. Having a circulation plan that would have to be in place, wider sidewalks, trying to reduce the curb cuts and make it a safer area. I will say then you've seen these emails that despite our best efforts to try to put something together that made everyone happy. We're still receiving feedback from the community that expressing some concerns. So I would encourage you to read those. We feel like we've done our best to put together a proposal that makes sense for the city as a whole. So I'll turn it over to Angela, and I'm happy to answer any questions about the commission's what the commission was thinking in our recommendation.
Okay. Good evening. So the agenda, Eric has covered some of the things I was initially going to talk about, so I'll go through the background rather quickly and so that we can get to the recommendation. I'll explain the Planning Commission recommendation both for the comprehensive plan and the zoning. And then at the end, I'll tell you, basically the Planning Commission and Houghton Community Council are giving a joint recommendation, but there are 6 points that the Houghton Community Council would like you to consider that could they would like you to possibly change. So we'll talk about those at the end. And you all have a handout in front of you that also describes those, hopefully a little more clearly than the memo, so you can understand the difference between what's in place now, what the Planning Commission recommended, and what Houghton would like you to consider. So, and then, of course, you can ask questions anytime during my presentation, or we can wait till the end, however you'd like to do it. Okay. So really quickly, if you remember, you passed a resolution, more than one resolution, basically continuing this over the last few years. But the main purpose of this was to make sure that the comprehensive plan and the zoning matched, because they didn't for a while. So that's what we're trying to do with our changes now. At the same time, Public Works and Transpo were working on a study of the 6th Street corridor, which has helped us and informed us in the work that we're doing on this. But the final 6th Street corridor study isn't quite complete. They'll be coming to you with that in the future. But we still have used that information and presented it to you all at past study sessions. So you know what I'm talking about with that. And I think it was very helpful in doing this work. As Eric said, Planning Commission and Houghton Community Council worked together on this all the way through. So that's what brought us in, I think, a lot of compromise so that we could come forward with a recommendation to you from both of them. You know about the public outreach. There was a lot of it. Summer and fall, we had the survey, we had neighborhood meetings, we had the community workshop, and then winter and spring, we had a number of joint sessions, like Eric was saying. And what we tried to do was have open houses before some of those study sessions so people could ask questions. A lot of people at the public hearing and heard a lot of opinions at that hearing, thought it was very useful. But then the two groups deliberated separately. And each had 2 meetings to deliberate so that they could come up with their own. We went back and forth explaining what each group said to the other. Staff did. Again, you know about public comment. You've been receiving it. We've gotten a lot of it, more than any project I've worked on, I would say. And again, biggest thing was traffic and I think density, but we also heard about building heights and community character, pedestrian safety, and school overcrowding were other issues that were brought up. This is just a map of the neighborhood center, and I'm sure you're all familiar with it, with the Evers neighborhood being on the north side of 68th and Central Houghton being on the south. So, and this you've seen before, just a reminder that we did look at different options. We worked with our consultants, Burke consultants, on this continuum, and we've ended up somewhere around the middle point on this. So now getting to the actual proposal recommendation for changes. This is the comprehensive plan map. And right now, you can see this center area, it's not changing. It's always been, it was commercial already, and it continues to be proposed as commercial. There's 3 areas that are changing. This area right here is the Doug Waddell property. Beneath it is the city-owned property. This area is proposed to be changed from medium density residential to high density residential. And you've received comments on that. We'll talk about it a little more as we go along. Also up here, this piece of property was multifamily, and it's proposed to bring that in and make it a commercial property. There's an old lawsuit on that property that allows it to be developed as if it had commercial zoning. I think it's from the 70s or 80s. And so it made sense to bring it into the neighborhood center and hopefully have it combined with some other properties. And then down here, this piece is changing. That's there's split zoning under the Northwest University office building, and that so it made sense, since this is smaller than the rest of the site, to bring it into the this zoning, which is office multifamily zoning, rather than to make the whole thing commercial. And we just removed it from the neighborhood center. I mean, it's already built anyway. The office building is over that site. So those are the changes to the actual comprehensive plan map, the land use map in the comprehensive plan. I know this is a lot of wording. I'll just try to go through it for you. This is a summary of the changes to the Central Houghton neighborhood plan. We'll get into more detail about what this means when I start talking about the actual zoning, but these are changes to the plan, and you have in your packet copies of all the wording changes to that plan and to the Everest plan. But just important key things that came up from both neighborhoods. Important that the neighborhood center was primarily to serve the adjacent neighborhoods. That was a point that was made many times. Maximum height for the neighborhood center limited to 35 feet. Right now, the existing Houghton plan had up to five stories, and that was one of the issues that we had to clarify with the zoning and the comp plan. But the wording has been changed now and to limit it to three stories. Heights of 30 feet are allowed, but there's some areas in that center area you can step up to three stories if you do certain things, and we'll. There's a number of requirements to allow that to happen. We'll talk about that with the zoning. Higher density residential units are allowed on that, or residential uses are allowed on that Waddell property that I showed you. And that's a change. There was some mention of higher density, but this is even more specific. City property was removed from the neighborhood center. The thinking there's a couple things. One, that property is kind of a buffer between the more dense area to the north and the less dense to the south. There was also concern, I would say, by a number of citizens about the city property being rezoned to allow more density. And so for those reasons, we just thought it was best to remove it. It's been recommended by both Houghton Community Council and Planning Commission that the city keep that property as affordable housing. That's just kind of a sidelight that they wanted me to bring forward. Yes?
Angela, what is it zoned now in terms of density?
RM 3.6. So it's 12
units per acre.
Yeah, 12 units per acre.
It's about a one-acre site.
Mm. Oh. I don't know this.
It's about two and a half.
Okay.
Yeah. It's very possible that what's been developed on the site doesn't quite match the zoning. I don't know that. But.
I actually don't think it does. Yeah. The work that was done by Burke, there's a little more density on that site than what
we'll give it a little bit more.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's existing, so it's a non-conforming legal. It's legally non-conforming what's there now because it was already existing.
Great, thank you.
So, let's see. And I already told you about the Northwest University changes to that property. And then there were some clarifications to the transportation section of the neighborhood plan, basically just to bring it up to date. And you received all those. And one of those I will be bringing up later because Houghton Community Council has a little different recommendation for what should be said there. So those are the main points in the neighborhood plan for Central Houghton. And then Everest, again, key points for Everest neighborhood plan, that it primarily serve the adjacent neighborhoods, maximum height 35 feet. That was already in the existing plan. That they already had that 35-foot limit. So that's consistent. And again, we have the 30 feet allowed as a general rule. The extra 5 feet if specific requirements are met. And I talked to you about the properties already that would have a change. Okay. Now, I think this will get more to the key things that would be changing as far as zoning. So we came up with three new zones. And as you could, so they're the HENC 1, 2, and 3 zones. But I'll just call them 1, 2, and 3. And you can see this one is the largest one. This is the PCC is here. This is Met Market is down in this area. This is a small office development right here. It was all zoned business commercial. Also over here, which is being changed to the 3 zone, was also zoned business commercial. So the majority of this area was zoned business commercial to begin with. This area, where is it? Right here, this is the 2 zone. And again, this is the Waddell property. It was originally zoned RM 3.6, and now it's becoming the HENC 2 zone. I'm sorry, you can't see that very well. But we will talk about what each of those zones mean. So the first one we're going to talk about is the big red one, the 1 zone, that probably has the most impact. So as I said, the existing zoning there is business commercial. That means that there's a 30-foot height limit right now. There's no density limit. It's required that 75% of the ground floor be commercial, and that can be office or retail, restaurant, tavern, a variety of different things, but it's got to be a commercial use. There's no limit on the amount of office. So in other words, with the zoning that's there now, potentially you could just have an office building because you could have all office on the ground floor and the rest of it office too. And there was some concern about that because that wasn't what the groups wanted for that area. And there's no design review requirement. So that's what we were dealing with. With the new proposed zoning, there are more restrictions. It's still mixed use with commercial on the ground floor and office or residential above. There's still the 75% ground floor commercial use requirement, which again could be office or could be retail, restaurant, or tavern. The difference is now, because of the concern that I just talked about of not having office buildings and without anything else, only 20% of the building square footage can be office. And it can be on any floor, but 20% of the whole building can be office, and that's it. There's an exception to that, and that is this area right here that we just talked about, which is all office right now, and we didn't want to make it nonconforming. And so in that area, we don't have that 20% limit. Another requirement is that the only drive-through facilities that are allowed are either for a pharmacy or a gas station. That's what it is. The thinking behind the gas station or the pharmacy was that many pharmacies now have drive-throughs, but they didn't want to go any further than that. And Houghton just has a different recommendation for that. Yes?
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's okay.
Has a question.
So I think I understand the motivation given the discussion around limiting office. However, looking at the zoning code, there's actually some office uses that people would think of as neighborhood serving businesses. I looked it up in the code, things like a medical or dental or healthcare office, an accountant, real estate, et cetera, office usage. I think the interest here is limiting the scope of office, mm-hmm. saying you don't want that. Was there any discussion about getting more precise as far as uses allowed so that you could have some of these neighborhood serving uses beyond that 20%?
And there was, and the decision was to go with the 20%, just because in some ways it's much easier to deal with rather than being very specific about each use. We could do it that way. I mean, with the 20%, you can still have those uses. You can have them on the ground floor. You can have them within the building. But the short answer to your question is yes, we did discuss that. It was hard to decide how to handle this, and then what we ended up with was that percentage.
Mr. Pascal.
Just staying on the office theme, I was just curious to understand a little bit more from the Houghton Community Council perspective about why you're recommending not to have office on the second story, and that differed from the Planning Commission recommendation. Mm-hmm. So I just wonder if you could offer a little bit more perspective on that and what the concerns are.
The focus came from the neighborhood plan about serving neighborhood, and we didn't want this to become a business center, one large user taking all of the office space. We wanted it to be a multitude of individual users, exactly those that you described. And in our discussions, we determined that the prescriptive approach to identify the individual types of users was more difficult than simply giving a percentage. So we ended up giving a percentage of office as opposed to prescribing the different users. But the main focus of all of this was really to prevent this becoming an office complex for one large user, but really to force it to become a multitude of mini users of smaller office groups that would serve the neighborhood.
Yeah, because my only thought on that was that typically you would want, if you had commercial in development, you'd want the retail to be on the ground floor and not necessarily the office, because the office isn't necessarily serving, in some cases, not serving the residents of the neighborhood in some form or fashion. And so, yeah, I was kind of reconciling that in my head, like why require it to be on the first floor when really we would want, if it's a neighborhood serving business, I think it would be more in line with kind of a retail establishment. We wouldn't want to prevent that.
Understood and agreed. We had a very long discussion about this, and this is how it worked out for the Houghton Community Council.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Shields?
Well, just to add a perspective as somebody who observed both the Houghton Community Council and the Planning Commission, I think both groups we're trying to get to the same objective, which was the one that John mentioned, which was to prevent this from becoming a single-use office building. And both groups were trying to sort of struggle with what's the reasonable way to do this to allow for businesses like the ones, Jay, you were referring to, insurance agents, whatever, to exist within the center. The important thing, I think, as John said, was really to try to limit it from becoming redeveloped. I mean, what if a major technology company wanted to expand into this area and they could literally buy the property and turn it into an office building? That was not desired by either group or by the neighbors who participated in the process.
Ms. Sweet?
So in a sense, you kind of bit off your nose to sweat your face a little bit.
It does show, doesn't it?
Just because it does limit you a little.
Absolutely.
Okay. Interesting.
Mr. Usher?
I'm interested in talking about the 20,000 square foot footprint for the grocery, whenever. Is this the time?
Next slide,
okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
This is, yeah. So, and I'll be there very soon.
Okay.
So, design review is required. As I said, it wasn't before, and that's been included now. And this master access and circulation plan is something that would be required for any site that developed. And the way, and this was another thing that we kind of grappled with, how do we make this work? Because it doesn't look like we're going to have, right away, the first project that develops might not be a big master plan development. It could be the Starbucks site, you know. But I think that the Planning Commission and the Houghton Community Council especially the Planning Commission felt really strongly that they wanted there to be a circulation plan and a driveway plan, all that, no matter how small the site was that developed. So the idea here is that you develop a small site, you're still required to have a plan for the whole center. Obviously, that plan is not going to be put in place. It's a plan that the city can use in the future. It also helps with your site, knowing that your driveway and your access is going to work with the whole thing. Then when the next site comes along, staff will look at it again and determine whether that still makes sense or should it be slightly adjusted. But anyway, that's what the thinking is here. For each site that's developed, we want to relook at the whole center and determine whether the access and circulation plan works.
Well, that triggered a couple questions.
Yeah, I bet it did. We had a lot of conversation about this, too.
I don't see how you do that. And I don't see how you do that with let tail wag the dog through this with, in your example was Starbucks. Starbucks redevelops, and they have to do a circulation plan for the entire neighborhood center, and that becomes the plan for the neighborhood center until someone else walks in. I don't see how you do that. I think we do it as a city, and we develop some parameters somehow, but the linchpin of this whole issue, to me, is transportation.
Mm-hmm.
The linchpin, and we haven't solved that up to this point and with what I've seen so far.
Thank you, Mr. Arnold.
I agree with the goal here is that we do want the master plan. We do want something that takes a look at every single parcel and how to go deal with the safety issues and the circulation issues. And we saw during the discussion a bunch of very interesting ideas, like having a east-west road on the north end of the property,
mm-hmm.
and consolidating access to both sides of 68th at a single point between 106th and 108th. So I think the goals here are right. I am skeptical as what's being proposed here is each parcel having to do a plan for the entire neighborhood center, and I'd like to see some other options of both what we can do to do this forward. Mr. Asher's got an interesting idea of saying, what would it take is this something the city should take on? But I'm also wanting to make sure, in addition to not penalizing the first mover, I want to avoid the freeloader. And so making sure that the entire neighborhood center is contributing to the cost of that. And if the simplest way of doing that is having the city do it, maybe that's something we take on. If there are other mechanisms, I'm interested in options.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Just some additional requirements. Development above two stories must step back from the surrounding right-of-way and the Cross Kirkland corridor. And now we get into the height issue. So it's 30 feet is the maximum height allowed outright. And then if the conditions that I'm going to talk about are met, there's a possibility of going up to 35 feet.
Mr. Asher?
Thank you. The initial mention of stepping buildings talks about stepping up to three stories. Now here we're talking about development above two stories must step back. So that's a clarification. What is a step back?
A step back is...
And I think I allude to the situation we ran into that no building can be more than two stories along Lake Street.
Mm-hmm.
So how big was a building is what we ran into. So how big is a step back? I'd like to see us somewhere in this define a step back. I've seen some buildings in the region have 1-foot step backs. I'm more in the 10-foot step back camp. But whatever we do, I'd like to see step backs defined.
Dave, maybe I could, you mentioned a great entree, the work we did in the downtown. In fact, we incorporated that very product into this so that the very, as you recall, what we ended up with is not a rigorous or uniform step back, but rather it's a formula by which as you get above the second story, there's flexibility in having an average step back of how much is that?
Yeah, I was just trying to remember. It's minimum 5 feet with an average of 15. It's written into the code itself.
So, in other words, through the design of the building and through the review by the design review board, this happens in the downtown now, thanks to that formula we did, that the building can have some variation. Parts of it may come actually right out to the sidewalk, but the majority of it is going to be set back an average apparently of 15 feet.
Well, so there you're dealing with five stories. Here we're dealing with three.
Exactly.
To get an average of 15 gives you 15. I'd like to take a look at how this would apply in this situation here so that we come up with a number. If we're only going to do three stories, then I think it simplifies what we have to do with this. Let's come up with something that we can apply as a yardstick that everyone knows looking at it ahead of time.
Okay.
Maybe when you come back, you could describe how that would work.
Yeah, that would be good.
Okay, yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. So to get that extra 5 feet, this is what you were asking about before. There needs to be either a 20,000 square foot grocery store or a 20,000 square foot hardware store or a 20,000 square foot drugstore in the development. So that's the first requirement. And if that's not there, the 5 feet doesn't happen. Along with that, the development plan needs to be approved by the DRB and needs to include a public gathering space, including public art. And again, in the zoning itself, it describes the size of that space. So you have an attachment with the zoning that talks about what that space needs to look like, the size of it. Commercial floor needs to be a minimum of 13 feet in height. It would probably need to be higher than that, honestly, for a grocery store anyway, but the minimum. Green buildings, 10% affordable housing is required for the residential uses, and there's a density limit of 900 square feet per dwelling unit. That's 48 units per acre. So there, to let you know, there's not a density limit on the 30-foot height limit because there isn't one there now. But then when you get that extra 5 feet, which presumably would give you an extra story, there is a density limit.
So we have Mr. Pascal and Mr. Asher.
Thank you. So just a question about, so with the extra 5 feet, the thought is, just so that I have it clear in my mind, there's a lot here, that it comes with additional conditions. And so, so and you list them there. And so I'm trying to just make sure I'm clear on this. So under the 35 feet, you'd be required to go through DRB. You would be required to have 10% affordable housing, and you'd have density limits. But under the 30-foot height, you don't have to go through DRB.
You do.
Oh, okay, so that is part of both.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's a difference from today, is that today they don't have to go through DRB.
Correct.
Okay, so that's good. So that's not contingent on the 35 feet. But the affordable housing is, and the density limits are.
Mm-hmm.
Could you talk a little bit about, one of the questions I got was, well, why don't you attach affordable housing requirements to the 30-foot as well? Is that allowed? Could we do that if we wanted to?
No. And the reason is that there has to be something given in exchange for that. And so 30 feet, no density limit is already allowed. And so there wouldn't be anything additional received in exchange for the affordable housing. So I checked with the city attorney. So we couldn't require it for that portion. Okay. But since we're offering that extra 5 feet for this option, we can require the affordable housing.
Okay, thank you.
So,
thank you. Mr. Asher, then Mr. Arnold.
a 20,000 square foot retail establishment, and it says a 20,000 square foot retail. So this is all of zone one. Redevelopment could reoccur on both sides of 68, and we end up with one 20,000 square foot retail establishment of some kind. Is that right?
I guess potentially that could happen. What we're saying is when somebody comes in for a development, they have to have that in it. So if somebody were able to own all the property in Zone 1 and come in for development of all that property at the same time, and they only had one of those establishments, yes, that's true. The thinking was that you would get a smaller development. For example, one piece of maybe the Met Market site would redevelop. And in that case, they would get that extra 5 feet if they had a grocery store of that size there or one of those other issues. But you're correct. If somebody was able to amass all that property and plant a development at one time, yes, they would only need one of those.
I would look for sizable retail outlets on a greater density than that. The one place I will favor density would be for more retail outlets, sizable retail outlets. So how we do that, I'm not sure. But to say that the minimum would be one of these, that to me really misses the mark.
So are you interested in tying it to maybe the size of the development, for example, if you have...
I would leave that to your good graces to give us from the professional opinion as to how we would achieve a greater, at least assurance of a greater retail presence with some certainty.
And Mr. Arnold.
I think Mr. Asher brings up a really good point. Part of the goal through all the discussions, there is strong support for retail, neighborhood serving retail in the center, and wanting to have certainly no loss of the neighborhood retail scale that's there, and potentially looking for other things like a neighborhood harbor store. So I'm definitely interested in some options there. I had some questions on a couple of the bullet points here. Green buildings. Was there any discussion of what the standard for green building is going to be? Is that something only required at the 35-foot bonus?
What was that?
Is it only required with the 35-foot?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the standard for it?
And... I was going to use the standard that we've used like for Park Place development and some of the other developments, but if you have a specific suggestion.
Is that lead silver?
Yeah.
Or equivalent.
Yeah, or equivalent. Okay. I think that's important because it changes with time. Yeah.
And then for the last bullet point, you mentioned this is maximum allowed lot area per dwelling unit is 900 square feet. You said that ends up being 48 units per acre, but... By having this particular language, is that also establishing a minimum unit size? It's the first time I've seen anything.
No, the way our code, that's the way the code reads, but it's actually talking about the square footage of the land.
Okay.
And you just divide the size of the lot by that square footage.
So this is not a new...
No. This is actually what was used for the Patala Village site. The same density was used there.
Okay.
Mr. Asher?
That's not a good reference.
It's the only one I've got.
But how might we see something like the residential suites? Would this disqualify something like that occurring?
It's not a listed permitted use in this zone.
Oh.
Residential suites are not allowed in this. So
just in downtown and Totem Lake.
Yeah.
That's right. Not even all of Totem Lake. In fact, that's a
so they're not yet
listed as a residential use.
That's right. Mm-hmm. They are a separate use
listing
in our zoning code, but they are not listed in the BC or in the Hank
yet.
One.
Okay.
Yeah, yet.
Okay. And I appreciate the question, because I could see that as part of this, and part of this even in the affordable housing mix, given what we've seen in some of these developments, how we make sure that it's good, like the ones that we've seen so far, and that's what we've always been gun shy about, is will the next one be good? Do we have the right structures in place to make sure that it's high quality? I don't know if we're out of that angst on that point yet.
Ms. Sweet?
Well, just in follow-up to that, that was the reason I asked the question about the city property, because it's my thinking that at some point that's not a new building. And at some point in time, if that does get redeveloped into something like residential suites, that would make a whole lot more sense. Yeah. So I think it's unfortunate. I mean, did you guys have any discussion about smaller units?
We had a lot of discussion about smaller unit size and how that relates with density. And the trigger point, I think, for the Houghton Community Council was density, which related to traffic. And we tried very hard to listen to our constituents about increase in traffic, and the overwhelming majority of letters and emails that we received were regarding limiting residential units as much as possible. There was also discussion that residential units drove the least amount of traffic, retail drove the most. But after our deliberations, we ended up limiting the residential as we did to try and limit traffic.
And the commission had similar conversations, and that the commission recognized that this 900 square feet per dwelling unit, it does in the sort of limit the, well, it discourages smaller units, studio one bedrooms, and it's something we recognize as part of our recommendation. And then in part, that's how we landed on this particular, trying to balance what we heard from the community with a desire of having a variety of housing stock.
Ms. Marcioni?
Because when we've looked at the residential suites and looking at Redmond, you're increasing your density, but you're really lowering the traffic and the use of automobiles. Yeah. So it seems contradictory to say they wouldn't be allowed. I think we really should look at that. Because this would be a good area when the transit service is getting better, and to have those types of suites there.
Lots to think about.
There goes my nose on the table.
There goes
again.
Your summertime, gentlemen. Okay, Angela.
Should
I think we're ready to
go on?
Please.
Okay. This is number two zone, and this is the Waddell property. And, you know, north of the city property. Okay. So in this case, the zoning was RM3.6. So the zoning now is RM3.6. The density is limited to 12 units per acre, as is the city property density. There's a 30-foot height limit, and there's no affordable housing requirement there, because there's no affordable housing requirement in Houghton in general. The proposed zoning is residential with unlimited density. So there's been an increase here, and you've received letters about this, to go from the 12 units per acre to a density that fits within the building. With that, there's a requirement for design review, and the height limit remains the same. There's some additional requirements, and they have to do with the step back again, which we'll talk more about next time I see you. And just a safe pedestrian connection to the Cross Kirkland Corridor, because it's right there. And again, green buildings, 10% affordable housing. Houghton felt that affordable housing was a good thing in this location, and we can require it because we're increasing the density there. So we're giving them something in exchange. And then there's a 14-foot sidewalk requirement along 68th. And I don't know if I mentioned that in we might have skipped over
it
that.
Was on the slide.
Yeah, but anyway, that's something that's required throughout is a 14-foot sidewalk. And actually, the Planning Commission, this was another point that they wanted me to make to you, that they feel that that should be a requirement in all the business district areas. So something to think about for a future code amendment in general. So that's what we've got for that number two zone. Any questions about that?
Mr. Arnold.
Design review. This is a residential-only area. Have we done design review for residential-only projects, or do we do it for mixed use with retail and residential?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have some other zones where they're allowed to have residential-only development, and they have a requirement for design review. We actually have design guidelines for residential uses.
Okay.
So, yeah.
And second question for Mr. LaLiberty. Given that the Planning Commission is recommending residential density limits in the neighborhood center itself, and also recommending that this property be outside the neighborhood center, mm-hmm. but also on limited density. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, can you talk about how those three recommendations came
sure.
together?
So this particular parcel, the Planning Commission has the interest of the Planning Commission is that this redevelops as multifamily, and that under existing conditions and even under existing conditions, and frankly, it may still end up. I understand there's maybe a
short plat application already.
So under existing conditions, it's going to develop as single family, and our recommendations for this particular zone are intended to promote multifamily redevelopment in this parcel, and it's the removal of the density requirements in part because of the nature of the parcel and wanting to have multifamily redeveloped there. So,
could I ask you a question? Yes. Also involved affordable housing as part of the bonus.
Thank you. Yes. Right.
And just one point of clarification. That property is still part of the neighborhood center. It's just a different zone. It's zone two, but it's part of the neighborhood center. It's only the city property that we suggest that's been suggested be removed.
And overriding, I should have also touched on it. The commission wants a variety of housing stock in this area, and this is an opportunity to have by doing this is an opportunity to have that in this particular part of the neighborhood center.
So I've got Mr. Asher, then Ms. Sweet.
Thank you. Additional requirements that are listed here could be achieved with anything. What we've gone is from 12 units per acre to infinity. So anything up zones, a number greater than 12 gives you the capability of achieving those additional requirements. Is that correct? Because if we go back to look at the traffic circulation thing that I will press home later on. We may want to do that just to achieve a traffic criteria of some kind.
Mm-hmm. So if I understand your question, you're saying, could we, for example, require affordable housing?
Yeah, we don't have to go to unlimited to get that.
You don't have to go to unlimited, that's right.
Okay.
You have to go to more than there
right.
now. Yeah.
The second part of this in this zone is
no, you don't have
correct
to
myself
do that.
Here. You don't even have to do that. If the Houghton Community Council were to agree to it, if we have a density limited zone, even at 12 units per acre, we do have the 10% affordable requirement on that, and it allows for a density bonus as part of that deal. But right now, the only reason we don't have that in this zone is because it's within the jurisdiction of the Houghton Community Council, and they have not, or at some point in time, they vetoed or did not, or asked not to have affordable
then
housing requirements.
Sometime in the future, tell me how come the Antique Mall didn't get it. But I'll move on from there.
I'd be glad to tell you that.
The real concern that I have is that the city-owned property could not redevelop with at least the number of units that are allowed now under what would be done, and with the potential if we might do some high quality smaller units couldn't achieve those additional density. So I'm really concerned about that.
We can come back with an analysis.
Yeah, okay.
Could I address that really quick with
sure.
you? I think the Houghton Community Council discussed that as well. We like the idea that that now is affordable simply because it's older housing stock.
Yeah.
We know that it's gentrified and it will be updated. I think our thought process was if we left it out of the center update, that it would be its own item that could be addressed later more easily, being left as it is right now. And not be part of the whole group of the whole master plan for the area. That was our thinking. So we just said, let's carve it out. Let's leave it alone. It's a good transition space between north and south, the residential unit. And when it wants to be redeveloped, that's the time to address that by itself.
It may be easier for you in the future, but it may be easier for me doing it now. So.
Thank you. Ms. Sweet, then Mr. Pascal.
Our property on what's going to be the RM 3.6.
Yes. Okay. It is.
Okay.
And right now there would be no change to it.
Okay. I guess the thing that I struggle with is in the HENC 2, this.
Yes.
We've already got a short plat request for single family homes. They'll probably go up within the next year. And it's going to be a neighborhood of 14 single-family homes zoned as HENC. That doesn't make sense to me.
It's just not compliant.
Yeah, well, why would we just make it non-compliant? That's frustrating to me. Maybe we have an earthquake in 20 years and it all falls down. And
it will comply with the zoning. It's just, I mean, it's fine. You can have single-family homes in this zone.
Yeah.
But it's just not using it to the degree that the Planning Commission was hoping.
Jones House is like that.
Ah.
I would add, too, that things change. You know, property changes, retail values changes, property values change, so conditions change. So you never know what's going to happen down the road.
Yeah.
Mr. Pascal.
Well, Ms. Swede kind of was... talked about what I was actually thinking about. And I guess, you know, in my mind, this area too, if it's owned by one property owner and if they're developing it as single family homes, I don't know why we're spending much time on contemplating what to change about it, because this person has said that, you know, if it's not more than 30 feet or four or five story, if it's not four or five stories, then it doesn't make any economic sense to develop it any other than what's being proposed today in the short platting. So I don't know. I mean, for me, it's like, why don't we remove this from this discussion, because it's almost like it's going to go forward and there we go. But that's just kind of in my mind.
So we got the Citium's property right here in that zone.
No, it's not.
No, it's not.
It's in the current footprint of the district, right?
Yeah, it's in the same zone as the Waddell property. Yeah.
They're taking it out and leaving the underlying zoning there.
Well, I mean, currently the zoning for both properties is the RM 3.6. What's being proposed to you is that the city property not be included in Zone 2. I mean, so you can have us put it back in, but right now it's not part of it.
The way to get density would be to
have it in
to put it back in.
In the zone,
yeah.
So that's where we would need the other properties.
Okay. Or the HENC. To put it in the HENC zone. Because right now, I mean, right now, the proposal is to just leave it as it is, leave the zoning as it is. So then you wouldn't have those options that you're talking about. If you want to put it back in and do something else, we can do that.
Leave it as it is, but we couldn't redevelop back to what's currently.
You're correct, and we'll bring back that information.
Yeah.
It's not off very far, but maybe like an extra unit or something.
I think it's 17 and 19.
Yeah.
Zone 17, currently there's 19.
Yeah.
I believe that.
It's pretty close.
If we went to residential suites, we could do much more, but we couldn't do it
under
RM
3.6. Correct.
Mr. Arden.
I can completely understand where the property owner has gone through this short plat to vest some rights, knowing or not knowing the outcome of this process. I think the Planning Commission has the right goal of saying we can do better than what's being proposed by Mr. Waddell with what he's got an application in. And I think Mr. Asher's got the right idea of saying if we had both of these in a Hink 2 zone and we looked at those requirements, maybe there's something with the two parcels together that has enough value to do something different than what the permit is already in. I would not necessarily say just because somebody has a permit in that says, okay, we're giving up on multifamily in this zone. I think we should see if there's some creative ways to do something between the two parcels.
Great. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
Should we go on to three?
Check here. We're 6:59. Oh. What's your plan here, sir?
Well, I think if we can go through the comparisons of the Planning Commission and Houghton Community Council quickly, if we get down about 6:07:10, we can probably still do the executive session.
Perfect. Let's try.
Okay. Real quick, we haven't done the third zone, which is the east side of 108th. But hopefully this one's pretty straightforward. There's not a lot of change. It's BC now, 30-foot height limit, no density limit, 75% requirement on the ground floor for commercial and no design review. That's what's there now. What we're proposing is basically the same uses, but design review would be required. Still 30-foot height limit and the requirement to step back above the second story. So the only changes are that we would require design review and we'd have that step back. And there also, I haven't been talking about the actual building setbacks, but like in this case, it would be less. It would be zero. You received that in your packet, but so not as much change here, but we would get design review. No affordable housing because no additional height. Or they're not getting anything. There's no there would not be a density requirement, but there wasn't one already. Any questions on this?
No.
Okay. Now, we don't need to go through this. Just we added some things in the design guidelines that will be used by the design review board for their design review, and you received that. And of course, if you have any questions, I can answer them. We took those to the design review board at the suggestion of the Houghton Community Council, and they looked at them to see if they could work with them and made a few changes, and you've received that. Okay, so as I said, basically the recommendation that's before you is by both groups. But Houghton Community Council did have some things they wanted you to consider, and there's six items, and we're going to hit them quickly. Two of them are comprehensive plan changes. So the first one has to do, again, with the Waddell property. This is kind of our problem child. The existing policy that's there for that property now is the first thing on the screen. Expand the area designed for higher intensity use to properties west of Houghton Center and south of Northeast 68th Street. So basically, it talked about higher intensity use. That's what's in the Central Houghton Plan now. Planning Commission recommended a slight change to that wording, allow a higher residential density on properties on the west side of 106th Avenue Northeast and south of 68th. But it's basically the same thing, more density. And what Houghton Community Council is saying is delete that policy and leave it at 12 units per acre. So, and you'll see that later in their recommendation for the zoning. So basically, they think there should be less density allowed there. As I understand it, it's not a deal breaker for them, but they feel strongly that they wanted me to bring that forward to you. The next one has to do with Central Houghton transportation policy. And the way I tried to show this in a way, the existing and what the Planning Commission is recommending are very similar. The colored area has changed. So what's existing talks about commuter pools, high occupancy vehicles, and potentially other transportation modes such as light rail. And the Planning Commission changed it to be a little more specific, talking about bicycling and walking and high capacity transit and high occupancy vehicles. Houghton Community Council did not like the idea that high-capacity transit was mentioned at all. They wanted that taken out. So that's the big concern. That's something to think about. And you can see high-capacity transit was added in the Planning Commission recommendation. Now we get into the zoning changes. Again, this is the same area, the Waddell property and the city-owned property. But we're just talking about the Waddell property here when we talk about Zone 2. You know what the Planning Commission is recommending, no density. Houghton Community Council wants to maintain the RM3.6 zoning on that property. So, in other words, they want the density to remain the same, no increase. The Houghton Community Council would like to have a specific cross-section of the requirements for Northeast 68th Street included in the zoning code. The way the Planning Commission has handled that, there's nothing there now, obviously, because we didn't have that in the past. We don't normally do that. The way that Planning Commission has handled it is they did put in the requirement in the zoning code for the 14-foot sidewalks on either side. And then the 6th Street Corridor study talks more about what that cross-section should look like, and that's what we would go to when the development was done. That would be how we would normally proceed. That there's mention of the 6th Street Corridor study in the comprehensive plan. That's the tie-in. So then that allows staff in the Public Works Department to look at that when 68th Street is going to be redeveloped. But Houghton Community Council felt that they wanted even more than that. They wanted it to be spelled out in the code. So that's the difference. They want that the requirements for 68th Street spelled out in the code.
Question.
Yes.
Today, is there any example in the city zoning code today where there's a cross-section identified anywhere in the city in the zoning code?
Well, we do have in Chapter 110 cross-sections for different classifications of streets, like a primary arterial, or mostly it's for residential streets, actually. But so, yeah, there are those. But for individual streets like 68th or 85th, no, we don't have that.
So this would be a first.
This would be a first.
Okay. Thank you.
Also in 110, it says for a street like this, Public Works Department can determine how it should be designed. And so that ties us back again to the 6th Street Corridor study. Okay, five. Drive-throughs. As I said, Planning Commission is saying no drive-throughs except for drugstores and gas stations. And Houghton Community Council is saying we don't want drugstores to have drive-throughs. Only gas stations. So that's a difference there. This is the office use in Zone 1, the major zone that we've talked about. And again, you know, the question about how do we handle that? So Planning Commission suggested the 20%. And Houghton Community Council said, yeah, we agree with the 20%, but we only want office allowed on the ground floor. So this is what you were talking about earlier. And those are the differences that were brought forth.
So questions or comments? I'd like to know where we go from here. But Mr. Asher.
I don't see how we, and I've got no problem with most of the recommendations. We'll have to sort through them. I don't see how we approve these changes without having codified some transportation measures. This, I think, literally is the cart before the horse in this situation. I don't know how we do it. That's going to require some creative tying of things. But until we can say traffic needs to be able to work at whatever level we choose, and it's not going to be a fun level, but it will be a level that that can function. I don't see how we can do land use without that, because any time anyone discusses this issue, it ultimately comes down to the transportation element that is the burr under everyone's saddle. And so doing these independently, I just don't think makes logical sense.
Thank you. Is there any comments, Mr. Kraskin?
Yeah, I just want to say that, you know, obviously it's an understatement to say that there's been a lot of public feedback, and I've really taken it to heart and really looked and considered everyone's input on this, which has been great, you know, whether it's community council or the planning commission or the public or neighborhood leaders or so forth, and property owners. The one thing that I was looking for initially when I read the packet was just tell me how the Houghton Community Council compared to the Planning Commission compared to what we heard from the public, and help me sort through those things. And so then I went on to the Houghton neighborhood website. Someone kind of turned me on to that, and there was a perfect matrix there that kind of shared that perspective of how they each differed. So thank you to whoever put that together. But that was very helpful in deciphering what was here today. So I hope that we continue to kind of take that and maybe use that in our discussions. And I don't know if the other council members have seen it, but
mm-hmm.
I would be happy. It's HoughtonLives.com.
Yeah.
So anyways, I want to point that out for those that are listening in. Go there, and it's a good summary of what the differences are. So thank you.
Ms. Sweet.
Just kind of going back to Mr. Asher's point, you know, I began this discussion early this morning with Mr. Triplett saying, you know, what are we going to make some decisions tonight, and then we're going to get the corridor study and sort of pick the scab off the healing wound, you know, 3 months down the road. But I do have this sense, and maybe Houghton Lives will help me, that we are going to make some hard decisions. I also have the sense that the small improvements that we can make over the course of the next several years in terms of affecting transportation on these two corridors is going to be very, very minimal. We don't have a lot of options. We don't have a lot of fixes. I think everybody worked really hard to try and come up with those, which is why I still feel pretty strongly that we should leave the trail in play. But we have worked on this for so long, it's like we've got to check off a list here at some point in time. And I don't know if Mr. Triplett can come up with some alternative that says, I mean, what do we do next
right.
to get to something? And, you know, our grand plans for a template for neighborhood centers did not come to fruition here. And is there another neighborhood center that we can take on and be able to look at conditions around another area where it might be more tenable as far as traffic and transit and all of the rest is concerned? But I don't want to just give up. I just think we need to do something here.
Mr. Arnold and Mr. Triplett, if that's all right.
When we had our original study session on this, we challenged the Planning Commission and the Houghton Community Council to come to consensus on some recommendations. And there were some eye rolls when I said that, maybe some sweat on the chair and the vice chair's brow at that. But if you look at the bulk of work that's happened over the last year, we have a handful of issues and consensus on a lot of them, and we need to take advantage of that momentum. I'm interested in hearing from city staff on the roadmap of how this fits in with the corridor study and transportation improvements and when we might be looking at those, but I agree with Ms. Sweet that the transportation improvements aren't going to make a big difference that will drive land use decisions. I think we have consensus on the land use decisions, and we need to move forward on this.
Mr. Triplett, got a plan for us?
I was just going to say that I think we clearly need to have another discussion mm-hmm. about this and relatively quickly, and I think that's the one big question to answer. I think if the council generally has a sense that these recommendations are approximately what they want to adopt, then we can really start to hone down the transportation decisions. Because right now we have the four or five options we're looking at, depending on how big, you know, the slow, medium, and big options. So, and I'm getting a sense at least that while there's still some issues around the edges, in general, the recommendations coming forward is should be the thing we plan the transportation investments around. I think that would allow us to come back with some discussions fairly quickly and not keep all options of transportation open. I do think the conclusion is the same, that there's not going to be a whole lot that we can do to improve transportation. But my suggestion is we try to get another study session teed up fairly quickly where we can I took lots of notes on the issues that I think are still out there, and then particularly discuss this link between transportation and the recommendations, and then try to have a time frame for getting to final action.
And work through these these conflicts. I think that's right. Yes, Mr. Usher.
Well, one thing we fundamentally can do is not increase the density until we see what the transportation system can take. That's a very fundamental thing that we can decide to do. It won't flow, so we won't increase the density. If it does flow at some level, then we can choose a level of having density. Just because the staff came up with a this is too cold, this is too hot, this is just right kind of situation doesn't mean that it's going to flow in the traffic world. That's my real concern. We're seeing numbers here that people can agree to on numbers. It's not working on the ground. We don't know whether it's going to work on the ground.
Right. I think that's the point I'm trying to make, is we can now analyze specifically if we assume these recommendations as the basis, then we can figure out what that would mean for traffic and then whether that's tolerable or not.
Right. Okay. Sounds like we have a plan.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Angela. You walking us through it made it
very,
very helpful. And thank you for your service. Planning Commission and Houghton Community Council, we really, really appreciate you and all your hard work.
Is it?
So we are.
Yeah, Eric, you can't leave one.
We are going to be convening an executive session to discuss potential litigation, and we'll return at approximately 7:30. Thank you. Good evening and welcome, everyone. We are back in session following a study session related to potential Houghton Everest Neighborhood Center plan amendments. Councilmember Nixon is out of the country on business, so he can't be with us this evening. So before I ask Ms. Anderson for the roll, I wonder if there might be a motion to excuse Councilmember Nixon's absence.
So moved.
Second. Thank you. It's been moved by Councilmember Pascal, seconded by Councilmember Marchione to excuse Councilmember Nixon this evening. Is there any discussion? Well, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And those opposed, say no. Thank you very much. Councilmember Nixon is excused. Ms. Anderson, would you call the roll, please?
Councilmember Pascal?
Here.
Councilmember Asher?
Here.
Councilmember Marchione?
Here.
Councilmember Sweet?
Here.
Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Here.
Mayor Wallen?
Here. Thank you very much. First item on our agenda tonight is we're very honored this evening to be joined by the Mayor of Bellevue, Mr. Stokes, City Manager.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Members of the Council, as you said, we have a very distinguished guest here, the Mayor of Bellevue. Kirkland, along with the City of Bellevue and the City of Redmond, have created what we call the Innovation Triangle, which is designed to have the three cities work together to increase economic development in our city. And we were honored for this effort by the region, received an award, and our friend, the Mayor of Bellevue, is here to share that award with us and say a few words about it. So, welcome, Mayor Stokes.
Good evening, sir. Welcome.
Good evening. It's good to, this is the place, right?
Yes.
All right, let me see where I can put this down here. It's really great to be among friends and see you and share this honor. Let me get it all out here and ready to go. Don't want to drop it. Let me talk about it first. I'll read you the letter here to dear Mayor Whalen. Thank you again for your support of the Innovation Triangle. Bellevue is very pleased to be a partner with you in this important economic development initiative to bring jobs and investment to our cities and to establish ourselves as a leading center for technology and innovation in the greater Seattle area. And the Innovation Triangle is the cities of Kirkland, Redmond, and Bellevue working together to make a great region. At the Economic Development Council Economic Forecast Conference this past January in Seattle with a huge ballroom full at the Sheraton, the Innovation Triangle was awarded the Public Sector Economic Development Champion. And throughout 2016, the Innovation Triangle was an impactful and dedicated partner of the EDC, and the recognition celebrates the Innovation Triangle's collaborative accomplishments and contributions to local and regional economic development in Seattle and King County. To recognize our collective achievement, at the event, what happened was I was there, and representatives from, I think you weren't able to come, and John Marcioni was not able to come. We had representatives, and unfortunately, when they gave out the award, which is, if I can get it out of here without dropping it, is a very nice and very heavy.
Wow.
It really is
beautiful. Yeah, and it's a great, a globe. It's amazing how they etched this. It's perfect. And it says Economic Development Council of Seattle and King County Economic Development Champion, the Innovation Triangles, a partnership. And ours said the partnership, the cities of Bellevue, Redmond, and Kirkland. And we only got one of these. So I got home and I said, you know, this isn't fair. So I talked to our city manager, Brad Miyake, and says, I'm sure we can find some place in the budget. But as a token of friendship and in honor of all the work we're doing together, we had duplicates made of this. And Redmond's, I presented Redmond's a couple of weeks ago, and it says Redmond, Kirkland, Bellevue. This one says Kirkland, Redmond, Bellevue. So
you got one right.
Right. Well.
Well, we appreciate your advocacy on our behalf, and I'm going to invite our representative on the Economic Development Council of King County, Ms. Sweet, down to receive the award from you, sir.
I was a little jealous.
And we really look forward to continuing the collaboration in many areas and work to make this a great place for all of us to live, work, and play in this Innovation Triangle. Thank you.
As do we. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
You can come more often, John.
All right. The next item on our agenda is item 5B. It's award-winning City of Kirkland videos. City Manager.
Okay, thank you, Madam Mayor. Keeping these themes of innovation and awards, when trying to figure out some innovative ways to communicate with the public, we had to get scrappy and come up with some internal production videos on a variety of things, and we've actually won some recognition as a result of that. So here to talk to you about the recognition we received and also the incredible internal folks who put it together and show you a few video clips is our Chief Information Officer, Brenda Cooper.
Thank you. I'm really, really proud of this work and of the team that did this work. We did about 4 special videos last year, and as of yesterday, we actually learned that we have won awards for all 4. So I'm just really ecstatic about that. So, Mike, can you come up so that we can watch the Unusual Suspects? So this is Mike Connor, who is our videographer. And he's often downstairs where you can't see him videoing these areas, and he's often out in the community videoing as well. So we're going to start off by showing you one of the shortest of the award-winning videos and then a little clip from another one, and then I'll talk briefly about the team.
The average car prowl takes less than a minute for a professional thief to execute. And while you're away at work doing your job, I'm busy doing mine. For an individual such as myself, I got the process down to a science. I just walk down a row of cars like this, check each one. quickly calculating my return on investment, making snap decisions. Like this car. No bag, no change, no sunglasses, or if it's showroom clean, I just move on. Until I find one that's worth the effort. Laptop, purse, phone, perfect. And that's what I call real ROI. And if we're lucky, there might just be a bonus.
I'm Police Chief Sherry Harris. Kirkland is a safe and friendly community. And because we feel safe, we sometimes forget to use common sense. These criminals go to work every day. And it's up to all of us to do our part to prevent property crimes like this. Never leave valuables in your vehicle or in sight. Keep car doors locked and windows closed. Never leave the garage door opener in your car. Thieves can use it to get into your home now or later. And always report suspicious behavior to the police by calling 911. We want you to call. And if you do these few things, it will go a long way to make sure you're not their next target. Let's put these criminals out of a job, together. For more tips on how to prevent crime, head to www.kirklandwa.gov.
Okay, and while Mike is teeing up the next one, I want to say something real briefly about the two unusual suspects. One, we showed you one. The other is available. Can you hang on one sec? The other one is available on the YouTube site. But these were kind of special. There's ones that you just saw. The community was upset about some car prowls and burglars are coming. You may remember we had lots and lots of people in City Hall. And Kurt called us up and he said, hey, I've got this great idea. I want you guys to help make this fairly quick video. And everyone agreed to help. And in like 2 weeks, we had these two videos done. And I'll go through the team in just a minute, but it was a phenomenal amount of teamwork. And they came out in a very short period of time with really no extra budget associated with it at all. Everybody just sort of gave up things and pushed work aside and made them happen. And it was, you know, at Kurt's suggestion, and I thought that it came out really well. And it showed how we can be responsive to the community. So now we'll show a tiny bit of the Kalakala video. This is long, so we'll cut it off.
Where do old boats go when they are no longer in service? Some, like Old Ironside, famous for its exploits in the War of 1812, receive a moorage of honor for life. In the case of the Kalakala, the famous ferry that plied the waters of Lake Washington and Puget Sound for half of the 20th century, pieces remain, and the city of Kirkland, which owns the most significant and recognizable ones, wants to use them to tell the vessel's story and inspire future generations. Because this story is not only the Kalakala story, it's Puget Sound story, Kirkland, Washington story, and ultimately the story of how technology, art, and the Northwest spirit of innovation produced a one-of-a-kind icon and could again.
Perfect. Okay. Thank you. So that full video is also available on YouTube, and it's gotten quite a few views. Over 2,000 people have watched that video. So I want to mention the team. Inga Heitchie, and if people would come up so that we can get a picture. Inga Heitchie and Terry Creighton both did camera work and editing. Inga did most of the editing on the Kalakala video. Mike Connor did videographer and production oversight. Kathy Cummings and Rob Mullen did production, direction, and scripts. Dimitri Ansira did motion graphics and editing. I don't think Dimitri is here. Ellen Miller-Wolf, who was not able to be here tonight, did a lot of the writing and the championing for the Kalakala video. I don't think we'd have it if it weren't for Ellen being such a champion for it. Matt Cruz and Rob Mullen did the narration. And, of course, Sherry Harrison and J.R. Morgan also did work on it. So we have, if we can come up here so that we can get a photo up here.
Yes, and Deputy Mayor Arnold is going to join me to celebrate these awards with you.
Brenda, don't you want the backdrop of my house?
Yeah, and Penny volunteered her house for the house brawl video. That's true as well. I'm sorry, I had almost forgotten that. So if you're the...
Cherry, you got to get in there, too.
I didn't know where.
Hey, you're the star.
Heroine.
Thank you.
Yes, the attorney is extended.
Yes,
it's right. Can you get us out?
use as a sign.
Thank you. And then the last piece of late-breaking news, so we didn't have an award up for it, here for it yet, is that Jim Lopez volunteered, worked on, sort of produced a core video, core values video with us, and we just learned Friday that we won an award for that too. So we'll talk more about that, but I want to make sure we recognize Jim as well.
Standing.
I'd like to note that they've chosen Other Duties as Assigned Productions as their name, so this is now their official team name. An extraordinary effort by the internal staff.
Extraordinary effort is right. All right, the next item on our agenda is item, it's also under Honors and Proclamations. It's the award-winning bicycle-friendly community proclamation. City Manager.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. So in our third list of awards, we were awarded the bronze level award by the League of American Bicyclists just this May. This is May, or last May. May is Bike to Everywhere Month. And only 18 cities in the state of Washington have been awarded a bronze, silver, or gold medal, and only Seattle holds the gold medal award. So, and there are four silver cities. So this is an extraordinary achievement to get, but it also gives us some places to aspire to be. And as we look at things like updating our transportation master plan and others, and active transportation plans, we have a chance to advance. But we're very proud of this one. And here to receive the award is John Perlick, the chair of our Transportation Commission.
Thank you for being here. And Councilmember Pascal is going to join me to make this proclamation.
I wanted to say one thing quickly. This is obviously a community award with many, many staff, former commissioners, former council members, current council members that deserves this recognition. But I did want to recognize one individual, and that's Joel's predecessor, David Godfrey, who really spent a large part of his career in investing in these bicycle facilities. So if you're watching on TV, David, thank you.
All right, well, it's an honor to read this proclamation. So proclaiming Kirkland, Washington as a bronze-level bicycle-friendly community. Whereas the city of Kirkland has received a bronze-level award from the League of American Bicyclists, a group founded in 1880 to advocate for better roads for bicycling, representing the nation's 57 million cyclists in its mission to promote cycling for fun, fitness, and transportation. And whereas Kirkland becomes one of 291 bicycle-friendly communities across 48 states. And whereas Kirkland residents know bicycling is about mobility, sustainability, health, and so much more. And whereas this award recognizes Kirkland's commitment to improving conditions for bicycling through investment in bicycle promotion, education programs, infrastructure, and pro-bicycling policies. And whereas Kirkland has implemented several policy changes to encourage residents to walk and bike more, including the adoption of the Transportation Master Plan in November 2015, which addresses current and future conditions with a multimodal approach, emphasizing the critical role of transit, bicycle, and pedestrian networks. And whereas the Kirkland Complete Streets Ordinance was updated in 2016 to emphasize that transportation facilities should accommodate travelers of all ages, all abilities, and all modes of transportation. And whereas the No Parking in Bike Lanes Ordinance was passed in 2016 in an effort to keep bikers safe by making it illegal to park a vehicle in a designated bike lane. And whereas Kirkland has constructed multiple projects since 2015 that encourage residents to walk and bike more, including the park lane redesign, adding bike lanes where feasible during the annual street overlay program, and the Cross Kirkland Corridor Interim Trail, which provides a 5.7-mile crushed gravel trail from Kirkland's southern boundary to the northern boundary, connecting 8 of the 13 neighborhoods. Now, therefore, Amy Wallen, the mayor of Kirkland, does hereby proclaim Kirkland, Washington as a bicycle-friendly community and affirms the council's commitment to continue to make Kirkland a great place to live, work, visit, and play. I would just also add,
make sure you look at the list of great project accomplishments in the packet, because the list of all the projects we've done that encourage and promote bicycling is quite amazing.
Thank you very much. All right, the next item on our agenda is under communications. It's item 6B, items from the audience. This is the time in our meeting when we hear from the public on matters which are not quasi-judicial or otherwise scheduled for public hearing. Please limit your comments to 3 minutes. However, we ask that not more than three people speak on any one subject. However, both proponents and opponents wish to speak, then up to three proponents and three opponents may address the council. So we do have a sign-in sheet, and the first person to have signed in is Santos Contreras.
Mayor, if we can, David Greschler would like to go first.
Absolutely. Yes, David Greschler.
Thank you. Madam Mayor, honorable council members. I'm here to talk about the unfinished business, item 10C, the Eastside Rail Corridor Regional Advisory Council. It seems that, rail on the CKC is a little bit like the whack-a-moles. You know, we work really hard to sort of stop it. And I know that many of you were involved in making sure that we didn't get it on our trail, and certainly citizens groups as well. But it seems like it keeps coming back. And again, it came back, and my inbox was filled this weekend when people read this MOU that you're being asked to sign, where specifically, it talks about the Eastside Rail Corridor, including high-capacity transit, great, but specifically explicitly says heavy rail and light rail or other form of fixed guideway transportation. So I just want to flag you this because I know some of you have worked hard to make sure we don't have that on our corridor, and maybe my recommendation is ask that portion to be struck, because it seems like, even 10 years from now or 20 years from now, someone could look at this and say, well, hey, it was part of the plan. They're doing it. So that would be my first recommendation. The second is this city has done an amazing job with the CKC. We've connected neighborhoods. We've done great stuff, great signage. And if you do read the regional branding strategy and you look at the input, specifically group roles and responsibilities, the RAC, at the end of the day, gets the final decision on this branding. And if you look at the deliverables, it's the name of the corridor, the vision statement, all applicable trail signage, website, and so on. So think about that is what I guess I would ask, and whether we want to relinquish control of the branding of the corridor, which we've worked so hard for. So I would just ask that of you, to think about these two components of this. And, I can see that, part of the plan is to discuss it and see if you want to make some changes. I'd suggest some changes here. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for being here.
Sure.
The next person to have signed in then is Santos Contreras.
Good evening, Mayor, Council. I'm here today to talk about the Eastside Rail Corridor Memo of Understanding. The MOU specifically mentions installing heavy rail or light rail. Before the successful package of ST3, I was a member of a group who worked very hard to defeat that measure. We were and are very much against transit on the CKC. For perspective, there are 17 rail-to-trail locations in Washington State which had the same background as a CKC. Not one of these locations is motorized or planned for transit. I hate to see us be the outlier. Kirkland is regarded as a jewel in Puget Sound. One of the reasons is our forefathers were passionate about preserving much of our natural beauty. Look at our great waterfront parks, Heritage Park, Juanita Bay Park. Had our city fathers not had a vision, both locations would have been filled with condos or homes. And that is a true statement. Those of you who have been around since 1984 will recollect that both those parks were aimed for development. I recognize that the council has previously planned bus transit on the CKC. The stated reason is that it's in the plan. I've talked to several of you on the dais, and that's what you say. Now, if the MOU is approved as written, the council is poised to sign up for heavy or light rail on the trail. Can you imagine the uproar if Seattle planned to put transit on the Burke-Gilman Trail? We continue to plead with the City Council to not put transit on our incredible trail. However, if you continue in that direction, which I anticipate, talking to enough of you, I pretty much can expect what's going to happen, we request that you modify the MOU to delete the words heavy or light rail and substitute transit. Otherwise, years from now, Sound Transit will place rail on the trail, and if anyone objects, the response will be it's in the plan. So with that, Cash is going to show you a quick video on what Sound Transit has in mind for us. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Perfect timing. Thank you. The next person to have signed in is Heather McKnight.
Oh, good evening, Mayor Wallen, members of City Council, and other attendees. My name is Heather McKnight. I've been a resident of Kirkland since 2016. I'm here with you tonight on behalf of Indivisible Kirkland Kenmore to make a request of the council. On June 1, 2017, the President of the United States announced that the U.S. would withdraw from the Paris Climate Accord, and that as of June 1, 2017, the U.S. would cease all implementation of the non-binding Paris Accord. In the days following this announcement, governors from Washington, New York, and California formed the U.S. Climate Alliance. This coalition is committed to upholding the Paris Accord and taking aggressive action on climate change. 10 additional states have joined the coalition since. At the local level, leaders from approximately 250 cities representing 59 million Americans have declared themselves climate mayors, aka, and I'm going to have difficulty saying this, the Mayor's National Climate Action Agenda, or MNCAA, definitely a mouthful. The MNCAA is a mayor-to-mayor network of U.S. mayors collaborating on climate to strengthen local efforts for reducing greenhouse emissions. There are no binding commitments, only that cities are pursuing actions to achieve an emissions reduction target through developing a community greenhouse gas or GHG inventory, setting near-term and long-term targets to reduce emissions, developing a climate action plan aligned with the city's targets. On May 16th, the Council showed its commitment to the environment and cost savings with a unanimous vote to participate in the Puget Sound Energy Green Direct program. As members of the community who love Kirkland, we urge the City Council to join Bellingham, Olympia, Redmond, Seattle, and Snoqualmie in this coalition to take action to reduce emissions and preserve our planet. You can bring the number of Americans represented by this initiative to 59,087,281. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. This is actually going to be before us at our next meeting. Thank you. The next person to have signed in is Lisa McConnell.
Good evening, Mayor, Council members, City Manager. As you saw tonight in your study session on the Houghton Everest Neighborhood Center, to kind of paraphrase what Dave Asher brought up, putting the cart before the horse is a bad way to go when we're looking at our neighborhood centers. I would urge the council, when they're considering our plan to do a neighborhood plan updates in the future, to add the component and in staff time, in budget, and scheduling to have the transportation component in the study for the different neighborhoods included in what you are considering for scheduling. It's going to take time. It's going to take some money. It's going to take some scheduling so that we can, when we move forward to update some of our neighborhood plans, which are in great need of updating, that when we come to the table and we get neighbors at the table to update, that we have a transportation study in hand with the information in hand so that we can discuss numbers and consideration of our options. Kirkland has been really terrific about linking the land use and transportation together, and I think we're pretty forward-thinking about how we're looking at the future of our city in this regard. I would ask you to include in your neighborhood plan updates and schedules some budgeting of staff time and maybe some transportation studies to go in advance of neighborhood plans. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We've reached the end of our sign-in sheet. Is there anyone else who wishes to address the council? Seeing none, I'll declare this items from the audience period closed. And the next item on our agenda is under special presentations, honoring the Kirkland Youth Council 2017 graduating class. City manager.
Okay, thank you. So award-winning class in front of you, who's going to step up and recognize for the commitment they've made to the greater Kirkland community, some of them for up to 4 years. We're very blessed to have the Youth Council here to provide us with insight and guidance on our policies, and we're going to recognize the outgoing seniors who are finishing up their time this year. So here to introduce them and say a little bit about them is Reggie Schuberger, who's the coordinator for the Youth Council.
Mayor and members of council, I'm Reggie Schuberger. I have the fortunate privilege to work with the Youth Council for over 20 years now. And every year when we get to this time of the school year, it's very sad but happy for me because I know they're always going on to great things. So we have four of our seven graduating seniors here tonight that I'll call up. First is Elizabeth Bensusen, come up. Brooklyn Brace, Catherine Ross, and Amber Gerbert Goldsmith. And let's see, Amber is a first-year member from Juanita High School. Catherine is a fifth-year member. She goes to Lake Washington High School. Brooklyn is a second-year member from Juanita High School. And Lizzie, four years, Lake Washington High School. So on behalf of the city and the many people who get to work with these fine young people, thank you for your service. We appreciate it. So if you want to get
like a strong generation of women leaders in training here. We really are so lucky to have passionate youth representing their interests on our boards and commissions, and we appreciate the work of the Youth Council. So thank you very much. The next item on our agenda is also under special presentations. It's the Studio East Community Report. City Manager.
Okay, thank you, Madam Mayor. So continuing our theme. Excuse me, I'm not on. There we go. Is this thing on? So continuing our theme of youth and award-winning programs, we now have Studio East is here to give us a community presentation. Studio East has operated in our community for 25 years, done extraordinary work training kids in the performing arts, but they also have a reach that goes far beyond the city of Kirkland. And so they're here to tell you a little bit about themselves tonight. And here is the Executive Artistic Director, Lonnie Brockman, to start us off.
Welcome, I've never Lonnie. Done this before. This is cool. Mayor Wallen. City Council members, my name is Lonnie Brockman. I, as Kurt said, am the Executive Artistic Director at Studio East. I have to start this thing. How do I, Philly? Okay, wait a minute.
Here she comes.
Wait a minute. Okay, I can do that.
I think it's hard.
There you go. Okay. Slideshow from beginning. Okay. Oh, it's a,
or not touch
screen.
Right, there you go.
Oh, okay. Okay. So.
25 years ago, I... Whoa, it's going like crazy. Okay, backwards. There we go. Okay. 25 years ago, I started a program called the Young Actors Professional Intensive. And it was a six-week summer program where teens could learn about the performing arts in an intense environment and study Monday through Friday for six weeks with college-level classes. That was very successful and snowballed into fall, winter, and spring classes and an opportunity to settle in Kirkland. Bill Woods, past city mayor, had property that he offered us to rent underneath the current Banner Bank. We had very few square feet. I think it was 2,000 square feet and 7-foot ceilings. And there's a picture here that's, there we go. 7-foot ceilings. It was, the floor was suspended because there was actually a running stream underneath the building. So that was good, so we could do dance there. 3 years later, we knew that Kirkland was growing and we needed to move, and I talked to Bill and said, do you have any other property? Is there someplace else we can move? What? And he recommended the building that NITEC is in now, and that was our second home. We were there for 15 years. We started off with 1,500 square feet, and inch by inch increased the size as we got larger. After 15 years, Things started moving, and our lease was up. We did a couple of extensions there, and we realized that we were growing out of it, and we found some property just south of Fred Meyer, our current space. We now have 13,200 square feet, have built a 150-seat theater, raised $500,000 in about 6 months to do the build-outs, which was pretty amazing, and now have three classrooms, a performing arts, a performance stage, and we offer year-round classes there, a homeschool program. We have summer camps where we impact over 1,000 Kirkland and Eastside kids every summer. We offer productions, a six-show main season that is done on this stage, and then we have a summer teen production, summer teen musical that many of you are aware of, and that's done at the Kirkland Performance Center. This year we're doing Mary Poppins, ha-ha, and we're flying, and it's terrifying. many of you know Studio East for the performances, the productions that we do, but we're so much more than that. And what I wanted to do is show you, is educate you a little bit about what Studio East does. Our first year we started off, I think we had a $19,000 budget. Our budget's now $1.8 million. We, like I said, have quarterly after-school classes. We do break camps, summer camps, homeschool classes. We have an outreach program many of you may not be familiar with, and we're in 12 local elementary and middle schools. We take up to 50 kids. It's an after-school arts program. We bring in musicals, the costumes, the sets, the musical directors, the director, the choreographer, and in 6 weeks we put on a show. In many of these schools, it's their only arts program or performing arts program. We've been doing that for 20 years. We also have an outreach program where we do classes at schools. That is like off the charts in popularity right now. And then our newest programs are educational, using theater. Neighborhood Bridges is an in-school literacy program. It uses storytelling to teach literacy. It's in the grade schools. We've just started that this year with funding from Microsoft. And then newest is our resilience project, and this is building awareness of youth mental health and breaking the stigma of youth mental health. From our sponsor is Evergreen Hospital, and we've just completed our pilot program of that with Juanita High School, and hope to be in many more high schools in the future. With that said, I would the other thing that we do. Oh yeah, how could I forget? These are some pictures of the outreach programs. We also do storybook theater. And storybook theater is introducing youth and their families to musicals, to live musicals. And that has an annual audience base of over 50,000. Our main home is the Kirkland Performance Center, where in my head I block everything on that stage. That's the home base. And we've been there for 20 years. And we also do Elves and the Toymaker, which is our holiday show, and with the Spirit of Giving, and we work with HopeLink on that. Okay, now I'm done. So what I would like to do now is introduce Chris Kale. Chris is our board president, and he's going to talk a little bit more about how we impact, well, the numbers that of kids that we impact, and give you some more information. So thank you so much.
All right, thank you. Thank you, everyone, for letting us speak tonight. As Lonnie said, my name is Chris Kale. I'm the president of the board of directors at Studio East, and I've been very fortunate to be involved for the last couple of years. Actually, more than that, my daughter started out in studio a number of years ago, but now I'm on the board for the last few years. And I do want to talk about how much an impact the studio has on Kirkland and the broader community. So if you think about, I'm going to just build these out for the sake of time. This is just, the numbers on the screen here are just the people, the students who have come through the classes just this in 2015 and 2016 alone. So 600 kids have taken the school classes, 700 at the area schools, over 1,000 participate in the summer programs, and 325 kids appear in and star in the shows like Mary Poppins and some of the other big main stage shows. And when you add it up, if you think about, okay, how many other people have been impacted through the studio over the last few years? So if you think about all the audiences for 25 years in the community, over 140,000, 33,000 people have been participated or attended shows in the education program, the teen shows at KPC, we estimate 25,000, Storybook Theater, 185,000 for school shows, 205,000 for public. So you can see here there's a general theme going that we think we've touched the lives of over 600,000 people through both main stage and all the other shows and activities that have gone on in the city of Kirkland. And we even just took it a little bit, you know, for fun, thinking like, well, what about all those people when they come to Kirkland? A lot of them spend money in the community. I'm a perfect example. Saturday, I was at the show, Wonderland, at the studio. I hopped down to Hector's. We went to the beer garden with my wife, spent $15 there. And then I went up to Katsukali Indian Restaurant, spent about $60 there as well. So all in all, I dropped about $100 in Kirkland at the weekend. Now, I know it's not going to pay for everything, but I mean, if you can just imagine everybody who comes into the city, they help fuel the restaurants and the other activities as well as part of the city. But numbers are great and dollars are great, but if you think about it, it is really about the kids and what the kids do and what they bring to the studio and what they learn and gain from it. As you can see on the screen here, these are some of the things, the top 10 things that kids get when they participate in the arts and how they can benefit from it. I won't go through the whole list now, but I can say after having met a lot of these kids personally, many of them don't know me. They don't know I'm the president of the board. They're just amazing, though. They're just positive. They look you in the eye. They shake your hand. They're very confident. And I don't even know them. They don't know me. So it's just who they are, and it's what they've learned by being part of the studio. So it's been tremendous to see. And with that and on that theme of, like, what can happen with great kids being at the studio, I'd like to introduce Abe Dulaney, who is a studio kid and who can tell you a little bit more about what he learned.
Welcome, Abe.
Thank you. I've given you sunshine. I've given you dirt. You've given me nothing but heartache and hurt. I'm begging you sweetly. I'm down on my knees. So please grow for me. My name is Abe Dulaney. I'm a junior at Juanita High School. When I was 8 years old, I participated in my first Studio East camp. In the camp, we created our own characters and made a show all around it. I remember every single day not wanting to leave. It was then that the seed was planted. Seed that has given me so many skills that I am thankful for to this day. I started out my professional shows at Studio East in fourth grade with the Art Reach program. I played Monk in Arabian Nights. This was the dirt for me, the foundations of my own theater career. I learned so many skills from it. I learned all about responsibility and having a part on stage and how important it was to form a community and create something. From Arabian Nights, I have gone on to perform in 9 main stage shows with Studio East. I was also a participant in Studio East 6-week intensive, Yappy, Yappy really gave me so much wisdom that I have used even to this day, and I apply to everything, to my school, my work life, my social life. At the beginning of the speech, I sang Grow For Me from Little Shop of Horrors, which I played Seymour Krelborn in and last year on the studio main stage. Out of all the shows, Little Shop definitely holds a special place in my heart. It taught me to grow and to work hard on something and to really strive for what I want in life. And I have the studio to thank for that. If it weren't for the amazing outreach program that affects little elementary school kids and everything that Studio East does, I wouldn't be the person I am today, and I wouldn't be standing here. So thank you so much for all of your consideration for Studio East. It's the generosity of people like you that really has an impact on people like me. Thank you.
So I just want to thank you for your time. We will be preparing a letter of intent to send to the council in the hopes that you can help us continue the good work that we do in Kirkland and on the Greater East Side. So thank you so much.
Thank you for being here, Lonnie.
Yeah.
Any comments, Mr. Arnold?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. And thank you, Lonnie and Chris and Abe. I'm familiar with the studio's production work because my daughter's, actually my whole family except for me has been involved. This is my performance art. But I appreciate hearing about the full scope and impact of Studio East program in the community. And when we received that letter, I'm wondering if council would be agreeable to referring it to the Planning and Economic Development Committee. The staff for that committee includes Philly and Ellen dealing with arts, and I think that'd be the appropriate place for it.
Are we okay with that? Absolutely. Thank you, sir. And I'd like to say, Lonnie, kids need academics, and they need sports, and they need the arts, and our community would not be as rich without you in it. So I think we're very, very grateful, and you must be very proud of what you've created. Yes, thank you, Lonnie. Lonnie and team. All right, the next item on our agenda is the consent calendar. Before we have a motion, I'd ask the Councilmember Marchione, the chair of the Finance and Administration Committee, to present the audit of accounts.
Excuse me. We had payroll of $3,127,972.91 and bills of $5,901,181.84.
Thank you. Is there a motion to approve the consent calendar?
So moved.
Second.
Thank you. It's been moved by Councilmember Asher, seconded by Deputy Mayor Arnold, to approve the consent calendar. Are there any questions, comments, or corrections? Mr. Pascal and Mr. Arnold.
Madam Mayor, I'd like to request that we take item 8E2, which is the annual striping program, and move that to new business. I'd like to talk a little bit more about that. Do you need a motion?
Do I need a motion?
No.
Okay. No. Okay.
Thank you.
That is now new business item 11A. Thank you, Mr. Arnold.
Just a quick comment on Green Direct. Much of the solution to the global climate challenge is local, and I'm really proud of the fact tonight that we're taking formal action to commit Kirkland to 100% clean green power, making progress toward our 2020 greenhouse gas emission reduction targets, and continuing the city's longstanding climate leadership.
And thank you for your efforts on that, Mr. Arnold. All right. Before us, we have a motion to approve the consent calendar. It was moved by Councilmember Asher and seconded by Deputy Mayor Arnold.
As amended.
As amended. And I believe, is there an ordinance on here? Mm-hmm. There's no ordinance. Will all those in favor please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And those opposed? Thank you very much. The consent calendar is approved. The next item on our agenda is unfinished business. It's 10A, the 2017 Legislative Update number 10. City Manager.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Mayor. So we actually don't have much to report yet. Again, there's not a lot of resolution going on down in Olympia. The great news to report, so I gave Lord McKay the day off for this. The good news is we have had our extensive meetings with our state representative and state senators in our delegation. And
most of them.
very good discussions, and I think the chair would like to speak to that a little bit too.
Please.
Yeah, we've had most of them, I think, have been very successful. It has it's taken some busy people that have been intensely busy for since the beginning of the year and re-raise some issues. They have some bandwidth now, so they're looking at some of our issues with the intensity that they've had all session long. So when we get, I think we've got two more to get with. The senators are just difficult to schedule, and I guess the wine merchants are really difficult to schedule. But we'll get them here. I think it's been productive to use this time, because they're going back down periodically and they're asking about our particular issues, and it's the same issues that AWC has been asking us to emphasize too.
These interim conversations are the initiative of Councilmember Asher, the chair of the legislative subcommittee, and I want to thank you for your leadership, because I think they've been incredibly valuable, and we have found through these conversations that we're reminding them about city issues. For example, I think the left pension issue came up, and a legislator said, oh, tell me more about that. And, you know, we're sort of reminding and bringing everyone back up to speed with Kirkland's agenda. Yeah. So they're very valuable. And I also want to take this opportunity to announce that Councilmember Asher has been selected as one of the Association of Washington City's All-Stars for his efforts in advancing the city agenda related to homelessness and housing through advocacy and legislative testimony. So congratulations, Mr. Asher.
And out of this body, I don't know how they selected me, because every one of us has been really good advocates.
So you're our all-star.
Your leadership is very clear.
All right. Well, I think that probably takes care of the next item of unfinished business, the 10B Association of Washington Cities.
Yes.
Correct?
Yes.
That is correct.
Thank you very much. The next item on our agenda is item 10C. It's East Side Rail Corridor's Regional Branding Strategy and Memorandum of Understanding. City Manager.
Okay, so we have two items wrapped up in this, discussion of the Memorandum of Understanding and the Branding Initiative that you heard some testimony about in items for the audience. So here to walk you through those, and then we'll be ready to answer questions, is Kari Page, our Cross Kirkland Corridor Coordinator.
Thank you. All right, so I am here tonight to talk to you about a meeting or a couple items that are on the agenda for the East Side Rail Corridor Regional Advisory Council meeting, which will be here tomorrow at 1 o'clock. And those two items, like City Manager Kurt Triplett said, Memorandum of Understanding and the ERC branding. The MOU is the new structure for the East Side Rail Corridor Regional Advisory Council, and I'll just say RAC in the future. The Memorandum of Understanding is replacing the original King County motion that was passed back in December of 2012. And what I'll do is walk you through the differences between that and today's structure, and also some things that are remaining the same. The most important is that the vision is not being discussed to change. And the vision was stated in the Creating Connections report in 2013, and it includes enhancing the mobility of our region, including high-capacity transit and non-motorized trail use. Could be that we edit the parentheses in the MOU on that. You can discuss that in a little bit. Integrate with a larger transportation network, enable key utility improvements, expand the recreational network, and create equitable access for all residents. The other thing that didn't change is the purpose of the RAC. It's to coordinate the planning and development, to partner in the planning process, to coordinate with affected cities, to address both near-term and long-term, to recommend changes to the county's countywide planning policies, and to coordinate on funding capital projects, and to develop legislative agendas and lobbying. The new structure does expand the membership. In addition to the owners and the easement holders that were in the original RAC, with the addition of Woodinville, they are also suggesting that we add adjacent cities and jurisdictions, including City of Bellevue, City of Renton, and Snohomish County. And for the first time, a non-government organization would be added, the Eastside Greenway Alliance. The Eastside Greenway Alliance was announced or unveiled to the community back in January in 2016 with the ERC summit that we had. Their memberships include Cascade Bicycle, Trust for Public Lands, FutureWise, Mountains to Sound Greenway, Transportation Choices, Washington Trails Association, and Fatera. The chair and the co-chair changed a bit. It used to be that King County did both the chair and the co-chair, and they are proposing that King County would retain the chair and that the co-chair would rotate for it would be elected ERC owners. And that could be every year or every 2 years. The decision-making model would stay the same, consensus. And this will be a theme, not to change, is that there is not a limit on any jurisdictional authority over the individual owner segments. So tonight we're asking for your input on the MOU to authorize us to move forward with them tomorrow or not. And if you are in favor, we will come back with the formal final MOU for you to authorize. So that's the MOU portion.
Thank you. Mr. Pascal?
Question on the MOU. Is this an MOU that every agency is signing, or is this one specific for the city of Kirkland?
It will be every agency signing.
Okay, so if we want to change the MOU, is that something that we could make on our own and other agencies can do what they please?
Correct. What we would do is bring that forward tomorrow. Do you want to answer that, Jay?
Please, Mr. Arnold.
Yeah, there's going to be a discussion within the RAC tomorrow. Okay. And what I'm looking for as Kirkland's representative on the RAC is any feedback on changes. What comes out of that discussion tomorrow will come back to the council for adoption. Okay. So if there are some themes or direction, I think I've got some. I think given the comments from the audience, there may be others that we'd like to carry forward.
Can I just follow up, or go ahead?
I was just going to follow up and maybe state maybe something similar to you might say, but regarding the comments from the audience, I do think that it says including high capacity transit, and then it gives parentheses heavy rail, light rail, and other forms of fixed guideway transportation. I mean, I'm not real clear why that needs to be in there, that parentheses. I mean, transit is transit. It can be all different types. I don't know that we need to say explicitly an example. That would be my own concern with that.
Thank you. Ms. Sweet?
I concur wholeheartedly. I think the point that I was going to raise, though, is I understood you to ask if the MOUs would end up looking different for different members, and I don't think that's the intention.
Okay.
Right.
But I do support the suggestion to get rid of the parentheses.
Thank you. Mr. Asher.
I support that also. And I think that it helps clarify. I don't know how hard over that was from the King County perspective, but I think we ought to work very hard on that.
Could I just follow up? The other thing, just to support that, I looked through the corridor master plan just for consistency's sake, and the corridor master plan is consistent. It says high capacity transit. Yep. It doesn't use those other terms in there in parentheses. So I think we'd be staying consistent with some of our adopted policies. The other question I had was around representation on the RAC. I just noticed it just jumped out at me because I haven't been part of this, but there's like four King County representatives. And we own essentially one third of the corridor. I don't know. That's probably been a source of discussion, I imagine, at some point. But it was just kind of interesting to me because it just makes it seem like King County is going to be able to have a larger say over things.
Want to comment on that, Mr. Arnold?
Two things. It's even interesting that it's both the King County Executive's Office and the King County Council that specifically have a representation there. A couple of comments on that. I think with the expanded membership of the RAC, you're going to actually see a broader perspective. We're talking about including new owners with Woodinville recently purchasing their part of the corridor. We're talking about having formal representation of adjacent cities, which has not happened within the RAC before. So Bellevue and Renton would actually get representatives. So this is actually somewhat of a dilution of King County's power. The work within the RAC has been very much as a culture of consensus, given that not just Kirkland, but all the owners are very protective of their rights as owners. We are not giving up any of our authority over this very important asset. And so it really is about building the consensus to say what is it that we're going to agree to. And the work that the RAC has done up to this point in saying, hey, can we have some shared processes? Can we learn? And a lot of this comes down to learning from what Kirkland has done about permitting events on the corridor. How do you deal with signage? How do you deal with emergency response and making those things areas where you can share best practices?
Thank you. Mr. Asher.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I think the unification of branding is a good thing because I think we're going to be, as a region, seeking a lot of other people's money for a very long time over this. It's some of the comments that we've heard both in the study session tonight and during the items from the audience are a bit naive in that one of the owners before we acquired our interest is Sound Transit, and they have a an ownership easement of the entire corridor. So that you can't dismiss that. That's an integral part of what this this corridor is, and it's got to be part of the consideration as to how we move forward.
Yes, Mr. Arnold.
To that point, I wanted to get concurrence for everybody in adding something to the purpose of the RAC. Mm. Kari, if you could go back a couple of slides. This is on page 280 of your packet. Talks about, one more back, yeah, there we go. The purpose of the RAC and the work that we're doing. There has been, in discussions on the RAC, some trepidation and actually taking official policy on Sound Transit last year. And one thing that I'd like to make clear and with the council's authorization is to add a purpose that says part of the RAC would be providing input on future long-range transit plans and system plans for Metro and Sound Transit.
Good add.
Okay.
You okay with that?
Good add.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Do you have the direction you need for tomorrow?
I think we have some more slides on branding.
Yes. Okay.
For the segue that Mr. Asher led. Yep.
Thank you. Next up is branding. This is an effort, a regional effort, to brand the full length of the ERC from Renton to Woodinville. But before I start this, that is not to replace our CKC brand or Redmond's brand. And we don't know what they're going to come up with, but we can take part of it, we can take all of it, we can take none of it. So before I wanted to say that before I start. Okay, so why are we talking about this? One is to communicate the vision more, to manage expectations, to build momentum, to expand public and corporate support. What will be the deliverable? It will be a new name, probably, for the ERC portion of the corridor. There'll be a tagline that captures the vision. There'll be a logo and design guidelines. And the design guidelines will be used for the trail, signage, the website, and electronic newsletter. Once again, we would still use the CKC portion for us and use pick and choose the parts that we find beneficial. How would we do this? We would hire a branding consultant. It would cost anywhere from $60,000 to $75,000. It would be funded by RAC members. But the municipalities would be responsible for doing the outreach in their own jurisdictions. And that theme, there would be no infringement on any jurisdictional authority over individual owner segments. And it would complement the existing nested brands like the CKC. The group expects to do this the second half of 2017. And the roles and the responsibilities are laid out here. King County would be the fiscal agent for the contract. EGA is really leading this effort, and the Trust for Public Land is the lead within that group. And they'll be the primary point contact for the consultant and the convener of the ERC agencies. The staff team will be making a recommendation to a RAC subcommittee. And here's where I will be keeping our constituents and you all in the loop as we go. And then we'll make a recommendation to the RAC subcommittee, and the RAC subcommittee then makes their recommendation onto the RAC. And we'll keep you abreast of this as we go. How were the dollar amounts computed? Here is the city of Kirkland's. This is based on a mileage, you know, what percent we have in it. Our dollar amount could be anywhere from $7,000 to $8,700 is what's estimated here. If you have any questions on that. So finally, we just want to hear some input on this from the council. We want to know if you authorize us to move forward tomorrow in discussions with them. And if so, keep in mind that we will come back with suggested funding sources and a mechanism to authorize Kirkland's participation.
Mr. Arnold.
So as I carry this branding piece forward, I am sensitive to the concerns that we heard from the items of the audience that we do have a brand in the Cross Kirkland corridor. In the branding exercises that I've been exposed to in the tech world, you can have nested brands.
Yeah.
Android, as an example of Google's phone system, is its own brand, but also very well known as being part of Google. And as we go about looking to get private sector funding, foundation funding, and other new sources of revenue to develop the entire East Side Rail Corridor, we want to be able to talk about the East Side Rail Corridor with perhaps a name other than the East Side Rail Corridor. And so we would be contracting with some professional branding consultants that have done this kind of work, that recognize as part of their work the need that there's going to be a nested brand with the Cross Kirkland Corridor, the Redmond Central Connector, and what Woodinville and other owners want to do with their pieces. So we are aware of that. I do want to get some feedback from council on how much you want to be involved as this process evolves and unfolds. I am going to recommend to the RAC that there is a check-in with the owners before the RAC makes a decision, so that you have a chance to provide some input into the branding process. Other than that, I'm open to feedback on how I should carry this forward.
Feedback for Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Just get her done.
Ms. Sweet.
I think you're doing a really good job.
Yeah.
And I think it is a very important project for us. I would suggest we're probably the leaders in the room. So our role is pretty important in terms of moving it forward. I think to our community it will always be the Cross Kirkland Corridor. But I also think that our community will be very excited when it is attached to the Sammamish River Trail and to you know, trail networks up going north and south and east and all over the place. So the branding element, I think, is important, but the heart stays with our little Kirkland Corridor. Pardon me.
Thank you. Mr. Pascal and Mr. Asher.
Oh, thank you. So in terms of getting feedback or kind of updates, I think I'd be very interested in hearing updates as, you know, milestones are reached. The other thing would be to make sure that we get that information to our own communication channels so that we can share that out with the public that has signed up for some of our listservs related to the Cross Kirkland corridor, and that it not just go to, out to the King County, the broader King County, but it also directly to our residents. So that'd be nice to make sure that happens. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Asher.
Last year we had a photo op with people pulling up ties on the south side of 108th. They were weren't pulling up ties. I don't think anything has been pulled up since then. Can you use the time tomorrow to find out what's happened with that?
Good question.
I have one slide on that. Excuse me.
Oh, do you? Good.
Yeah. Excellent.
I don't know if you want the good news first or the bad news first.
Try me.
All right. So let's start with the north. And we had anticipated that the King County would do their rail excursion RFP, RFQ process by this time this year. But unfortunately, they haven't gotten to it. They've been really tied up with the South End Phase 1 design and getting ready for construction. So that's probably not going to happen until later this year, which would mean that northern section would not go into design probably until next year and then construction after that for the north end. The good news is that they are moving forward with that connection, that 1 mile from the CKC to the 520 trail connection, and they still hope to have that done, although we haven't seen any action yet physically. They want to have it done this fall, and we have recently discussed joining the opening of that with the opening of the 520 trail across 520. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's the target, and I hear they're still on track for that. And then the south end from really Coulon Park to Newcastle Beach Park, they're working on also as phase one, and they hope to have that opening later in 2017. The gap in between, because of permitting, because of very expensive road crossings, and because you have the trestle and the gap, is really holding all that up. In fact, I think that we're probably going to be going in for a Tiger Grant with our Totem Lake connector and missing pieces there for 2017. We're looking at that. So that's going to be a ways out.
Okay.
That's all I have.
That's all you have.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much for your presentation. Initially, I had my RAC concern, give me space feeling that I have around the RAC, but I'm convinced that you're all right, and Mr. Nixon's made me feel better about this. And I think if we get rid of that heavy rail language, I think that'll make all of us more comfortable. So thank you very much. All right, the next item on our agenda is also under unfinished business. It's 10D. It's the amended recommendation to approve funding from the lodging tax reserves for the Kirkland Performance Center technology upgrade. City Manager.
Okay, thank you, Madam Mayor. So this is an amended update that's actually been passed and approved by the Tourism Development Committee for reallocating monies to help upgrade the Kirkland Performance Center. And so here to walk you through that is Philly Marsh from our Economic Development Group and also Jeff Lockhart from the Kirkland Performance Center.
Thank you. City Manager, Madam Mayor, and members of Council, I'm here tonight with Jeff Lockhart, the Executive Director of the Kirkland Performance Center, to present the amended recommendation of the Tourism Development Committee regarding LTAP funding for the KPC technology upgrades. Last year, City Council approved the recommendation of the TDC to provide the Kirkland Performance Center with $100,000 in funding for technology upgrades. These upgrades will benefit Kirkland Tourism by attracting top-tier performers to the KPC that have a regional draw, resulting in hotel stays, as well as providing the necessary equipment for large-scale business meetings and presentations. Attracting such business meetings is a current strategy and goal of the Kirkland Tourism Program. The original proposal was contingent on substantial fundraising efforts of the KPC that are currently delayed. The TDC would like to implement the most essential upgrades as soon as possible to start capitalizing on attracting a tourism audience. KPC will be responsible for the fundraising and implementation of the remaining original proposal. And without further ado, I'll introduce Jeff Lockhart, the Executive Director of Kirkland Performance Center, who will provide further information on this request and the benefit to Kirkland Tourism, and I will be available for any questions you may have after. Thank you.
Thank you, Philly, and good evening, Mayor Wallen and members of the council. We appreciate your time and the opportunity to present and update you on this proposal and the work that we're doing with the Economic and Tourism Development Committee. I just first want to say how important it is, again, our relationship with the City Council and what we mean to the city of Kirkland. And this slide presents our feeling that, well, art changes people and people change the world, and it's that's not just a cute saying. We really believe that. That's at our core what we do. It's really great to see what happens on the stage every day, every night at KPC, but also, as important, what happens in the chairs. And the technology to communicate this and support great art that happens on KPC, like Studio East or some of the other presentations that take place throughout the year, really is dependent upon technology. And so your consideration of this is very important to us, and we appreciate that. KPC is an economic driver in our community on the east side. Some highlights this year, we've had 84,000 visitors to downtown Kirkland. It's the largest ever in the history of KPC, our largest attendance ever in our existence. We have 240 shows that drive traffic year-round to Kirkland restaurants and shops. World-class artists, festivals, and cultural events all drive traffic from near and 50 miles plus away. And it's important to note that many cities invest in Performance Arts Center to revitalize their downtown region. So right now in King County, Federal Way Performance Arts Center just got finished and built. Mercer Island's building one. We're well aware of Tadayuchi Center that's being built. And all these great performing arts centers in the King County region, other places like Bellingham, the Mount Baker Theater, our friends down in Longview at the Columbia Theater, all are dependent on the latest technology to continue to be vital and bring downtown resources to their communities as well. Our current situation is KPC, in regards to technology, has 17-year-old analog equipment, which limits our ability to attract world-class and cultural artists. So you might see, hey, you've had the highest attendance and things like that. It's our biggest challenge is not only is keeping and retaining those types of artists that want to come back and use us, and we're limited by technology that's almost 20 years old in terms of our sound and video and things like that. Cities in King County with new performing arts centers and digital equipment will compete with Kirkland for artists and customers. I mentioned Mercer Island, Federal Way, Tadayuchi Center, and Bellevue. And the Tourism Development Committee and City Council have graciously already approved $100,000 to upgrade the equipment as part of a larger capital campaign. KPC is marching toward financial stability. Our ticket sales and rentals don't cover the cost of doing business. We have to fundraise other ways and do things to compete that way. Each of our presented shows is a risk to our operating budget. And it's important to note that although we sell tickets and we sell shows out and things like that, every time we present a show and commit to artists and the cost involved with presenting shows, every one of those shows is a risk to our budget. A third of our income each year comes from contributing income between $350,000 and $500,000 per year, depending on the year. And KPC must invest in creating a sustainable and predictable model for generating contributing income for operating expenses before we can undertake a major capital campaign, hence our request to have $100,000 to get the crucial and critical technology going now. We've also had an endowment that we borrowed from in the past to cover some challenges we've had, and we've had an ethical obligation to repay that endowment, and we're working hard towards that. So what we're proposing respectfully tonight is that City of Kirkland release $100,000 for sound and light equipment. That's not contingent on matching funds. KPC will invest in tools that will help us build a stable fundraising machine. We are investing in consultants and software and people to continue to be viable and economically feasible for the future. But these technology things to do that is critically important for us to continue on our mission. The initial proposal that we presented you was to update our lobby and concession area, but we're going to postpone that to have a more stable fundraising system. And we are going to use a line of credit and emergency reserve to pay for three ways of equipment. Should this get passed, we'll do this in three funds, and then have proposed that gets reimbursed in a timely manner afterwards. So we, again, appreciate your consideration of this proposal and are honored by that and happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks. Any questions for Jeff? Mr. Arnold.
And just to confirm, Jeff, this is $100,000 that we've already allocating the budget. You're
That's
just
correct.
Changing the conditions on it to be
That's
able to
correct.
Move forward
yes,
faster.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Asher.
I thought the $100,000 was to be the last $100,000, that the $400,000 was to be raised, and this was to be the 100,000 to complete. Is that was the original agreement, I believe, wasn't it?
Yeah, the original proposal was that outline, and we went back with the Economic Development Tourism Committee and with our board of directors. It wasn't, as I mentioned, for us to be viable in our operations, we felt, our board and our leadership, that we couldn't undertake a major capital campaign like that and continue with the plan that we have to keep our operations budget going. It would be detrimental to that. And this $100,000 being phased in now would allow us to get the technology going and then continue on that plan and then phase the other things at a later time. And Kirsten, this is Kirsten Larson, our board president. She might have a
comment as well. Kirsten Larson, I'm the board president. And just as a representative of the board, when we originally came to the city council with this proposal, it was really before, it was a few years ago, it was before we had quite as tight a control on our financial systems and understanding where our revenue was coming from and understanding what our fundraising needs were. And so our first, we knew we needed this equipment. And so our first idea was to, you know, undertake a major capital campaign. We know a lot more about our organization 3 years down the road than when we first asked for these dollars. And one of the things that we realized is that we have to fundraise year over year at least $350,000 just to keep the doors of the theater open. And so realistically, we do not have the expertise or the fundraising model right now to do that and undertake a major capital campaign at the same time. And so anytime that you raise for a capital campaign, you take away from people wanting to give to your operating budget. And so we did not think that we would be successful trying to do both. Once we have a more sustainable and predictable, you know, stream of income from fundraising, then I think we can go back and look at our lobby and those other things and actually undertake a capital campaign. But we would be undermining ourselves if we did that.
I'm concerned about the financial stability, and I can see us providing funding on a dollar for dollar basis, but a dollar, $100,000 for $14,000 seems a bit large for me. I would suggest that we look at doing it on a dollar-for-dollar basis as the Performance Center is able to match at whatever levels you want to do, that we would open up that $100,000 purse to that amount.
Ms. Sweet?
Thanks for your presentation and for all the hard work you guys are doing. I have to disagree with Mr. Asher because I think that this particular upgrade is really a vital add to the Performance Center's ability to maintain a level of fundraising and performance that will assure they can have the stability to do what Mr. Asher is saying. I admit that, you know, there is an element of risk in it, but the Performance Center is something that I feel like was born of this community. Mm-hmm. Our community's heart and souls are in it. I believe the wherewithal for a capital campaign is there, but I appreciate the integrity with which the board is approaching asking people for money. This is a vital reload in terms of equipment. Our Tourism Development Committee, speaking on behalf of Toby here and the group, have considered this a number of times, and these are tourism dollars. So it's not like it's coming out of the general fund. And, you know, I would actually support moving forward with this and would make the motion to do so.
Second. Thank you. It's been moved by Councilmember Sweet and seconded by Councilmember Marchione to approve the amended recommendation for funding from the lodging tax reserves for the Kirkland Performance Center technology upgrade. I thought I saw Ms. Marchione next.
Yes, I wanted to comment, too, that I agree with Ms. Sweet, that I think this is the way you need to go on this, and that also we all have emails from Mr. Nixon in Hong Kong, and and he was saying he's sorry he couldn't be here tonight to vote for this, because he feels very strongly about it.
Thank you. Did I see you, Mr. Arnold? Mr. Pascal.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I also just want to say that I'm full support of this recommendation by the Tourism Development Committee. A couple things that I just want to point out folks that didn't read all that, the information in the packet, but that the KPC is going to be kind of covering if there's any cost overruns. So I thought that was good, and seeking additional grants to match against this. So this isn't just here you go. It's like, here you go, and what can we do to leverage that? And so that's a good, I like that strategy. And then from a technology standpoint, I totally get it. I mean, we can't analog equipment. Some younger folks don't even know what that is. Right. So
a lot of technicians we hire don't know how to, right. how to do it. Yeah.
So glad to see that we're going to be coming into the digital age here with the KPC. So thank you for all your work.
Yes, I appreciate your work as well. Thank you for the presentation. I get the fact that you can hold more events because you have state-of-the-art equipment, and that success sort of breeds on itself. And this is a city asset, and it's a treasure, and you know it's in our best interests and the interests of the community as a whole to keep it going. So good work, and keep going. So the question is on the motion. It was moved by Councilmember Sweet, seconded by Councilmember Marchione, to approve the amended recommendation for funding from the lodging tax reserves for the Kirkland Performance Center technology upgrade. Will all those in favor please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And those opposed say no?
No.
Thank you very much. That motion is approved. Thank you for being here this evening. We appreciate it. So we are on to the last item of unfinished business. It's 10E, the Totem Lake Connector Bridge. I'm wondering if you'd like to take a break now or press on through unfinished business. Break now?
There might be some discussion on this. So it might be worth a
some
break.
Some discussion on this one?
Yeah.
Okay, let's take a break.
Let's take a break. Okay. All right, we'll be back in 10 minutes. Thank you. All right, we are back after a 10-minute break. We are moving on through our unfinished business. We're up to item 10E, the Totem Lake Connector Bridge. City Manager.
All right, thank you, Madam Mayor, members of the council. So tonight, if you feel like you have enough information, you get to make a decision on the preferred option for our Totem Lake Connector Bridge. So here to walk you through all of the data we have gathered to this date is our Senior Project Engineer, Aaron McDonald.
Good evening, Mayor, Deputy Mayor, council members. So again, we're here to hopefully select a preferred option to move forward in design. So what I'll be showing you is graphics of each of the four bridge options, somewhat annotated from what you've seen in the packet. I have a few graphics that illustrate how each bridge alternative was scored in the areas of project cost, technical merit, and the public input we received from various surveys. And then hopefully we will have a motion to select a preferred alternative. So I just wanted to remind you real quickly the four goals that we are trying to achieve here are create a gateway feature, a sense of place, an integration with the setting, and provide a unique user experience. So those are kind of the touchstones that we've been keeping in mind as we have moved through the design process. And where we are at right now is approximately 10% design, so we've done enough work to make a good judgment on how to score these bridges and provide that information to you, but there's still a long ways to go here and plenty of opportunity to shape this to meet those four goals. So the first option that we selected to look at was the gates, a series of three V-shaped towers that use stay cables to support those spans. It's a very symmetric option, and as a result, it's the lowest cost of the four as we rate those. So the second one was the skipping stone, and this is trying to create a strong connection from Lake Washington to Totem Lake. It's a little more technically challenging to construct, but still very low cost comparatively. This is about 103% of the cost of the first bridge, the gates. And one thing this has going for it is it's a real stiff structure, so it doesn't require any damping, which some of the other options do to deal with the motion of both the users or any potential vibrations from earthquakes or things like that. The half arches is one that was brought back in after our initial round of looking at these. It features two spans that step down in size towards the lake there that have a series of cables leading towards Totem Lake with two major backstay cables that support the missing part of the arch. In a normal bridge, you would have that arch supporting the bridge under there. They've kind of cut that in two, and then you're left with the idea of how do you keep that from falling down. So they've tied it back, and it has a fairly extensive anchorage system that's related to that. And the final option that we looked at was the suspended ring. This is a very dramatic feature that is at the Totem Lake end there. It's supported on a single support with cable stays holding it up. And the defining feature of this is it tends to float above the wetland area there. It has no supports in the wetland, whereas the other three options do. So some of the data that we gathered or developed to help you make this decision is illustrated here. So the table on the left are all technical criteria. These were put together using engineering judgment of the firm we hired to design this. And the way to interpret this is they used a numerical system, and the highest score is your best option. So they looked at things like in the additional project cost, one of the risk we have is the amount of steel in the bridges. Now, the first one that we showed, the gates has very little steel in it. The final one I showed you, the suspended ring, has the most steel. Steel prices are variable, and they have been escalating over time. So to kind of give you a sense of that, the gates has some steel in it, and the skipping stone has some steel in it. The half arch has the least amount of steel in it. The suspended ring has the most amount of steel in it, and that's why you see it gets a score of 1. And you can go through all the rest of these criteria, such as the perceived construction risk, again, because a few of these are very complicated to construct and erect. They have a higher risk to a contractor, so they get a lower score. So when you go through these various criteria on the technical merits and add those up, at the bottom there in the totals, you can see that the gates gets a 43, the skipping stone gets a 45. So those are your two highest scoring there and have the best scores in all those technical criteria. So I might stop there and ask if you have any specific questions about any of those criteria that I could try to answer
for
you.
Thank you, Aaron. Mr. Asher.
Thank you. But evaluating the criteria in relationship to one another, in other words, the lines there, I think are meritorious and a reasonable way to compare alternatives. Summing these vertically, I think, is meaningless because you haven't got a way of weighting particular ones, and that's sort of our job. But I do appreciate the individual inputs of the comparison of each of the alternatives to the characteristics. Thank
you. Okay. And I might add there, you are free to mix and match these any way you like, and if you'd like us to do additional work on that, we can certainly do that and come back to you. So looking at the graph on the upper right there, total project cost, this is just for phase two. So the numbers there relate to phase two, and this is construction and design and construction costs. So that would include things like inspection, the design fee to get us through phase two, which will be to the 100%, and the actual construction cost. Again, this is just to give you a relative idea of where those fall out. The gates is the least expensive, because it has the least amount of steel in it, and it uses quite a number of repeating elements, so it's fairly easy for somebody to construct. Going to the far end with the suspended ring, that gets the lowest score, because again, it has the highest risk, and it's the most costly, I should say. On the bottom there, we wanted to illustrate all the public input that we have received. So we had a survey in open house, two public online surveys, and then after we had submitted the memo, I received some data from the state of the city that occurred here about a week and a half ago, and I added that one in. So you can see in pretty much all cases, the skipping stone was the one that was favored by the respondents of the survey. So that's the end of the presentation, and our request here as that is that City Council by motion select one of these alternatives as a preferred alternative to advance to 30% design. If you do need more information, we're certainly willing to put pen to paper and provide that information to you.
Thank you.
Mr. And Asher. I might also say that...
Oh, sorry, you're in.
Yep, sorry. We recommend a 2-foot deck width, but I understand there might be some discussion about that. So.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Mr. Asher.
Yeah, I have no problem with any of these alternatives. I think each of them are intriguing. If you could have included what was in the drawings, the Promethean sculptures holding the half arches, I think that would have been really cool.
Right.
But
we can brand these any way we want. So that
and,
might be
I understand.
Option.
But the favorite is the skipping stone, and I like that one as well as any. The thing that I would like to discuss is I think we have a singular and irrevocable opportunity here on width, and the way the width was calculated by the firm, it was as if it was a transportation facility, and this is a transportation facility for a significant part. But I think that once you get elevation in this, that it becomes there's a significant aspect of it that is park. And in fact, our Pied Piper that has taken us through the Cross Kirkland corridor commented on this in the in his analysis. Guy Michelson said all the current designs provide a stunning engineering ring. He was talking about that end, but all seem to focus on movement along the trail. There is a need to provide spaces and eddies for people to stop. So I would like to see if we might be able to expand the width to the 16-foot width. And it would cost us somewhere between 9 and 12% more. We would get 14% more width out of it, but for 9 to 12% more on cost, but I think I think there is enough there, and there's going to be enough happening that a wider and providing for more things to occur would be smarter for us, because we can't go back afterwards and say, whoops, let's stretch it out a little bit. Don't get that opportunity.
Yep. Point well taken. As you might remember in the memo, I commented on the width as a function of delineation.
Yeah.
Expanding that a little bit, you could also add the width and choose not to delineate, but you've bought yourself some insurance if things in the future turn out to be more more loved than they
right.
were expected to. I did speak with a consultant about this a little bit today, and we think that there is an opportunity to continue forward without answering this question at this point. As I mentioned, we're at about 10% right now, and he said this is the perfect time to do that. We don't really need to make that decision until we get to 30% or beyond. And we also believe there's an opportunity, depending on which one of the options is chosen, to leverage that in our favor when we go to bid. And what we mean by that is the more symmetrical bridge options here, the gates and the skipping stone, they're essentially the same whether you build 14 or 16 foot. So to a contractor, it's not a huge additional cost. So one of the options we came up with is we could design for 16 when we're doing calculations for foundations and whatnot and kind of be really conservative, but put this out with a bid at 14 with an alternate for 16 and see what we get. So, you know, we're
cool.
kind of delaying the decision a bit, but we're also, if we decide to continue with that decision when we get to 30% and build for or design for 16, we've bought ourselves that option.
Super. Thank you.
Mr. Pascoe, Ms. Sweet, and then Mr. Arnold.
Madam Mayor, I'd like to make a motion to select the skipping stone as the preferred alternative and advance that to 30% design with having staff continue to look at the width as part of that.
Second.
Thank you. It's been moved by Councilmember Pascal and seconded by Councilmember Asher to approve moving the skipping stone option to 30% design with the width to be kept as an option to be further analyzed. I'm going to call on Ms. Sweet and then Mr. Arnold.
Okay. I don't know. Skipping stone? Yeah. People's choice. The question that I would have about the width is in the Cross Kirkland master plan, how wide is the design leading up to and leaving?
8 and 12. 8 for pedestrian, 12 for bikes.
They will converge, yeah. And that's where you're getting your math, isn't it?
Well, no, I'm getting my math just out of the alternatives presented.
Oh, right.
I'm looking for wider.
Okay, I got it. But that's what I wanted to see is how much narrowing is there going to be? Thank you.
Yeah, I might add to that. So the cross sections in the master plan show a 16-foot wide envelope. 12 of that is paved with 2-foot paved shoulders. Mm. So remember, at this particular point, we're not going to eliminate the option to continue north if you're coming from the south end up to 124th. It will get narrower because we want people to be drawn this direction. This is the route. But we fully anticipate that it will be able to seamlessly transition up that way. And the other thing we need to keep in mind is PSE and other utility holders and their needs for access through there. I reminded the consultants of that because they had narrowed that trail down to like 6 feet. On the lake side, or the Totem Lake side there, the landing also interfaces with one of the nodes that's anticipated for the CKC master plan. So from this point forward, I'm going to be working closely with Berger Partnership, the Parks Department, and my design team to make sure that we incorporate all those, past design ideas and plans to make sure everything fits together seamlessly there and we don't create any inadvertent blockages.
Cool.
Thank you. I'm sorry, Mr. Arnold.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Aaron, I wanted to really congratulate you and thank you for the thorough process that you've done where we've involved the public, done significant outreach. We've involved folks on our Cultural Arts Commission. We've engaged a variety of experts during this whole process. And it really has added value to this decision. If I was looking at this compared to the last study session, I was drawn to the arches design. It was simple. Maybe it's my background as an engineer. But you take a look at the big picture of against our goals and the evaluation of Mr. Berger said really that really wasn't that unique. And with the feedback that we've got from the community analysis across all the factors we have with the skipping stone design, the one that's the best meets our criteria and is unique and makes that unique landmark and is within 3% of the base cost. I think this is a win-win-win. The design has broad community support. As Councilmember Nixon stated, it's something that has the potential of being replicatable across bridges throughout the corridor. And in fact, it kind of matches the logo of the corridor that we have today. So I'm excited with this decision tonight.
Thank you. Mr. Pascal?
I wanted to build off of some of those remarks and just compliment staff and the consultants and everyone that was involved. I found the process kind of an evolution. It was really interesting, to start. And I think I had some preconceived notions in my mind at the beginning of what I thought was best. And then it changed over time as more information came out. And that really showed how as we kind of dug into it and got more broader input from the community, things kind of changed. And there was a lot of questions from folks about cost, about the aesthetics, how it would fit into Totem Lake, how it would fit into the future. And it was really interesting to see the skipping stone actually come out ahead, both from the public, from the consultants, and from the urban design, the engineers and the urban designer. I thought that was really interesting to see it all kind of come together. I don't think typically happen all that often, but it's good to see that. So thank you for leading that.
Pass that on to the team.
Okay.
Well, we have a motion before us. It was moved by Councilmember Pascal, seconded by Councilmember Asher, to advance the skipping stone option to final design for the Totem Lake Connector Bridge, keeping options for width open. Will all those in favor please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And those opposed say no. Thank you very much. That motion is approved. Thank you, Aaron.
Thank you so much. I look forward to continuing to work with you.
It's good news. The next item on our agenda, it's under new business. It is the old item 8E2, which is the annual striping program. City Manager.
All right. So I think go ahead and defer to Councilmember Pascal, who had some questions, and Kathy Brown, our Public Works Director, is also available to answer questions. And we look forward to the conversation.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Council. Thanks, everyone, for indulging me here. But I read the striping program briefing, and striping to me, you know, I think most people would kind of overlook it. You know, what's that? You know, what are we paying for? But it's a really important thing to the community. It's a real safety issue for our roadways, and so I take a particular interest in it as a walker and biker and driver. And so when I read the packet, I was a little bit unsure of really why we couldn't do the whole thing. What was in Schedule C, D, and E that we couldn't do? And then when I looked at it a little bit further, we were actually getting pretty favorable bids from the contractor for some of the schedules. So I asked the staff just kind of what was behind some of those schedules, and how could maybe we do all of it, or how would we prioritize some of those things that we couldn't fund this year? And so I think I asked our Public Works Director about it, and I don't know if you want to give a little bit of background, but I mean, I can make a motion here on this, but maybe you could provide a little bit of background on what we talked about.
Sure. As Councilmember Pascal said, the bids on this particular project were favorable, which was great. Our construction budget that we have set aside for this work is $318,000, and the apparent low bid for all work came in at $395,000. That's for all work, including the three schedules that we were hoping we could add, you know, a little bit of. The apparent low bid for the two schedules that we were hoping to award came in at $214,000. So the bottom line is to do all of the work that's included in all of the alternatives, which would be 100% of all of the work that our team has identified, would be the $395,000. Since I've been here, we've never been able to do 100% of all of the striping and street marking work. We've never been able to do that. So it would be nice to do that. It would cost another $77,000 dollars to do that. Even if we don't add funding, we will be able to get much more done than we originally anticipated, so it's very good news on this contract. And it's really nice to have good news after bids come in, because as we know, that hasn't been the case in this construction market on a lot of our contracts, but this one came in very favorably.
Thank you. So I'd like to just make a motion to award the contract, but give notice to proceed on Schedule A, hold off on notice to proceed on the B, C, D, and E, and over the next 2 weeks, evaluate options and come back to council with approval on how we might be able to do all of it or a portion of those schedules. And that in no way, I think we'll still be able to move forward, you know, on schedule and maybe just look at options a little bit further to maybe do a little bit more, because we got some favorable bids here.
Absolutely. And I would add to that that by awarding the contract, it does allow us to enter into discussions with the contractor rather than, you know, hypothetically thinking how we might do this. We could actually start working with them and come back with more detailed information.
Okay, it was moved by Councilmember Pascal and seconded by Councilmember Asher. Let me make sure I got this right, that we give notice to proceed on the annual striping program for Schedules A, and we pause before giving notice on Schedules B, C, D,
and E.
And get back more information, and then we'll proceed with making decisions on the rest of the schedules.
Correct.
All right. Thank you.
Question for the staff. Delaying the decision on Schedule B, would that not slow down the process on our striping window?
Schedule A is the striping. Not to get overly technical, but Schedule A is the striping. The rest of the schedules are the thermoplastic work, so that's the sort of raised pavement markings.
Right.
It would delay that by a couple of weeks. But the main thing is getting the contract awarded and entering into the discussions with the contractor and working out the schedule. You know, another option would be to award B as well. But if you wanted to look at priorities over the whole program, you know, either way would work.
I just want to be assured that the two-week delay is not going to affect the other schedules.
It's always better to get started earlier, and we've had a lot of rain this year. So we could give notice to proceed on Schedule B and come back with options for the other. The advantage of doing that is it gives us more days to work. The disadvantage is then you can't look at all of the schedules together and decide which ones are your priority. So either way would work. Again, the contract would be awarded for the entire contract. It's the notice to proceed that we would delay.
I'd be happy to amend the contract. I mean, the motion to just move forward with A and B and come back with the remaining.
Okay. I'll second that amendment.
All right. So it's moved by Councilmember Pascal and seconded by Councilmember Asher to amend the prior motion and give notice to proceed on Schedules A and B, but hold off on Schedules C, D, and E until we have further information, presumably at our next meeting. Is there any discussion? Well, all those in favor of that amendment, yes, sir, if I made a mistake.
I just want to clarify. So bring back one option would be no additional money and then several options for how to fund the whole package. So you make a choice then on whether or not you want to go ahead and fund the remainder. That's what we bring me back to the next council meeting.
Right.
Okay.
C, D, and E.
Options.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you.
All right. So it was moved by Councilmember Pascal, seconded by Councilmember Asher to amend the motion to include notice to proceed being given on A and B, but C, D, and E being held temporarily. Will all those in favor please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. And those opposed say no. Thank you very much. The question's on the main motion to approve. So that now it will say notice to proceed on Schedules A and B, but holding off on C, D, and E until we get a little bit more information. Will all those in favor please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And those opposed say no. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. All right, that is... Yes, sir?
No,
we're okay? Okay. We're going to move on to reports then. It's the City Council Regional and Committee Reports. Why don't we start with Councilmember Pascal, since we usually start at that end. Or would you like me to start at Mr. Arnold?
Yeah.
Let's start with Mr. Arnold. Deputy Mayor.
The number of things to report and then one question for the council. On Tuesday, May 30th, I met with the part of the state auditor's team that's kicking off our audit and was conducting a question session with me and our risk assessment. On Wednesday, May 30th, I attended the open house of the Kirkland TV studios and great facilities there with the remodel so that Mike Connor and team can continue their fantastic work, their fantastic award-winning work. On Friday, June 2nd, I spoke before 8th graders at Finhill Middle School who are doing civic action projects. They may be sending mail to the council with ideas of things that we should be doing. Homelessness, animal safety, and the environment were key themes. That evening, I had the privilege of doing a ride-along with one of our police officers, and I'm pleased to report I was very impressed by the compassion and professionalism of our police officers as we patrolled around Kingsgate and Totem Lake neighborhoods late on Friday night. And then finally, got to present on the dedication of Bud Holman Park in the Kingsgate neighborhood, and it was a fitting recognition of Mr. Holman, who spent 40 years in maintaining the open space for the community. So, in addition, on upcoming things, at our next council meeting, we'll be doing a study session, continuing the discussion on Metro's 255 service. And given all the feedback we've had so far, I would like to propose that we form a Metro work group, similar to what we did with Sound Transit. This would function as an ad hoc committee. And I'd like to move that the council form a Metro work group and that Councilmember Asher, Councilmember Pascal, and myself serve in that work group.
I'll go with that.
All right. It's been moved by Deputy Mayor Arnold and seconded by Councilmember Asher that the council form a, what are we calling it?
A Metro work group.
Metro work group to talk about Metro route restructuring. And is there any discussion? It would be yes. Composed of Councilmember Asher, Councilmember Pascal, and Deputy Mayor Arnold. Well, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, say no. Thank you very much.
Thank
that
you.
Is approved. Thank you.
We may need a public demonstration budget.
So, can I make a, I'm sure I'm allowed to make a friendly amendment, but a suggestion that maybe the category also be broadened to discussions of the other transportation mm-hmm. investments on 405. They're kind of related. So if we have a group like that, we can also talk sure. about the Sound Transit and 405 investments as well.
Okay. Sounds good. We have a lot going on in the transportation world. All right. Thank you. Ms. Sweet.
Okay. Lots of 4th of July planning going on. I think I'm having about 10 meetings a week. Attended a broker's event. Billy's gone. Lived at Carillon Point, where we had real estate brokers from a lot of places. And Ellen and the rest of the Innovation Triangle folks did a really good presentation. I think it was really well received. I think there was a lot of really good feedback that we got from the brokers who were present. And the more I'm associated with that Innovation Triangle, the prouder I am of the work that we're doing. Let's see. We had the Volunteer Appreciation Event. Was that recently? Or do I have my dates mixed up?
Yeah.
Okay, my date's fixed up. By the way, you guys did a really good job with that. I attended my first SWAC meeting, and I was extremely effective in that I have now been able to consolidate half of the SWAC meetings with the MAC or MISWAC meetings. So I've eliminated half of my meetings for the year, and I'm really proud of myself on that one for my first meeting. So we will be working in concert with MISWAC in developing the comprehensive plan that is due to be completed by September. The Cannes State of the City was really well done, and I want to appreciate everybody who was there. And I think, Kurt, you did a great job, and Amy. It was so well received. I think that was just a really good discussion. Cascade Water Board, the good news is that the feds have come across with the real money for the Mud Mountain Dam repair.
At last.
People are really excited. Yesterday, it was very fun. Went to the sixth grade class projects. Kids were here a couple weeks ago or a month ago or so, and we sent them on to the park board, I think. They're going to meet with the park board next week. But yesterday we were able, Jenny Gauss went with me, we were able to go for presentations of six more projects that these kids are doing. They really are motivated to try and they want to, you're going to love this, Dave, they are measuring every impact that they make. And it's like, that is how they're grading themselves on the, not on the curve. It is, it's really an incredible body of work. And then Paul's farewell party. I just want to say, you know, Paul Stewart has been here forever. And I think that he had amazing turnout and really, I mean, really great response, both from commissioners and just community folks and old council members. I was just really impressed with the turnout for his party, and want to just publicly thank him for everything that he has done.
That's it.
Oh, no, one more thing. I can do this in calendar if you want, or I can do it now. I'm actually doing this on behalf of Toby. There was an article in the Seattle Times with regard to the administration's moving toward not funding the emergency response system. I think it's at everybody's chair. He sent it to Dave and myself as members of the Public Safety Committee. Joe took this and had staff draft a letter. I like the letter. I hope we can approve that to send it on. I am also going to take that, if we do that, to the Emergency Management Advisory Council next week, and I will ask other municipalities to sign on, and EMAC as a whole, if we can get them to do it. So if anybody wants to...
Do we need to make a motion? Or are head nods okay for this?
Best mark formally to just make a motion to approve your signature on the letter.
Okay.
Now, is this to be addressed only to Congressman Riker?
It would be sent to all members of the delegation.
All members.
Yeah.
So I would move that we send the letter to the Washington State Congressional Delegation, similar to the text that we're seeing here presented by the staff.
Great. Second.
Thank you. It's been moved by Councilmember Asher, seconded by Councilmember Marchioni, to send a letter to our Washington Congressional Delegation, similar to the letter before us that has to do with the fully funding the West Coast Earthquake Early Warning System. Is there any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, say no. Thank you very much. Authorization granted. Thank you. Is that the end of your report?
It's in.
Do you want to talk about Juanita High School's groundbreaking?
Oh, no, you talk about it.
Okay. Ms. Well, Marchioni.
No report.
Thank you. Mr. Asher.
Just key thing to report was a very successful pancake breakfast from the Kiwanis Club. Good money. And the city manager brought a table full there, and it was really good money for Attain Housing. Successes all the way around. Thank you.
Good job, you. Mr. Pascal.
I think much of it has already been said, but the only other event that I attended was today. I actually spoke in front of the second graders at Thoreau Elementary. They were studying government and had a lot of questions about laws and regulations. Some of actually that stumped me. So it was good. It was fun to do that. And then tomorrow, I think Mayor and I get to throw out the first pitch at two of the Little League games, the Kirkland American versus Kirkland National for the city championship up at Everest Park. So that'll be fun.
No.
That'll be a lot of fun.
I can't throw. I'm terrible at throwing. And John just told me I have to throw overhand.
You can throw underhand.
You
can
throw underhand. Oh, my gosh.
You've got to throw overhand.
Oh, see, look, Doreen.
Doreen, of course. The baseball aficionado. So don't you want to talk about the Juanita High School groundbreaking?
I was going to let you.
So Councilmember Pascal and Councilmember Sweet and I attended the Juanita High School groundbreaking today. It was a very exciting day, and it was full of students and teachers past and present who had attended Juanita High School, and they had the band and the drum band and the cheerleaders, and they did a nice presentation, and we got to toss some dirt, so it was a good day, very good day. And then I wanted to report on some Sound City's business. Redmond is going to write a letter to the Senate delegation about the importance of the LEF. Well, it was suggested that a city should do such a thing, and we nominated Redmond, so they are going to write a letter like that and talk about, you know, we discussed that the LEF conversation was an old one, and we should go back, and that shouldn't have been done that way, and they want to draw the comparison about liquor and marijuana revenue in the same historical context. You know, if you want to go back in time, maybe we should go back in time both ways. Then you know about this Regional Roads Initiative, which is another effort sort of like the Bridge and Roads Task Force funding for rural roads. I know Joel is going to be representing us on the staff group. There's an elected group meeting on June the 13th. It's been suggested that if we don't think that there's an appetite for some sort of funding at the end of this, that we should be there and say so. So I'm going to put that out there, and we could talk more about that. The Veterans and Human Services Levy, the latest I've heard is that the executive suggested that it go from 4 cents to 12 cents, one-third for veterans, one-third for seniors, and one-third for human services. There's some discussion in the region that although our population sees the need, that there's a concern about the appetite for taxes, given all of the tax activity lately, and about our human services agencies having the capacity to deliver that kind of volume of increased services. I was wondering if we could get a report or some sort of, if I could just get some information about camping in parks. I guess there's recently been a decision in Boise about camping in parks, their camping in parks ordinance. And I guess I don't know where we are with that. I was telling Councilmember Asher that I've been asked to sign on to a mayor's climate commitment letter, and we heard about it again tonight in items from the audience. Lori is going to bring us a presentation, and Shoreline's actually passing a resolution about the climate accord, their own standards, but I think we actually already have that, so maybe just signing onto the letter. So that's coming back to us at the next meeting. I didn't want to do that one tonight without Councilmember Nixon being here. I was wondering about our affordable housing task force. Have we invited developers, realtors, and the master builders into that process? And is there, when will our next update on that be?
That's a great point. We have not scheduled one. We can easily do that.
Could we do that?
That group is allowed to, is being set up to make formal presentations to the task force. So,
okay.
But we'll make sure we bring back an update at the next council.
Okay, perfect. And then I think that's the end. Well, I do know that former Seattle City Council member Sally Clark is now the community and government relations person for the University of Washington. And I know that there's the problems that we've discussed with the going to the UW to get on the train, the 255, that it's not a very comfortable transition right now. And I'm thinking that maybe we could talk to Sally, because a lot of us have good relationships with her, and show her just how difficult that would be. Maybe invite her to take a bus ride from Kirkland. So that is my report, and now we're going to move on to the city manager's report.
Before you there's a series of meetings, and in fact, there is another survey that Metro has thrown out, I think, yesterday, and there is a tour of the University of Washington transfer scheme that Metro was doing. Maybe I'm the only one that got the email yesterday. I'll send it out to everybody, maybe we can go. There's two meetings here in Kirkland. There's a series of meetings at UW, and then there's a survey that you can take on online. I will make sure that I bring it up to the Regional Transit Committee. It's sort of a would you like to be shot to death or knifed to death? It's kind of choices, it gives you an opportunity to have some input.
Thank you. Well, I'm told there's some dispute between the UW and the Sound Transit.
Just a little
You've heard that.
Yeah.
Okay. City Manager.
Okay, thank you, Mayor. So the first item, I want to thank Deputy Mayor Marilyn for putting up the slide. We had an issue that we sort of took for granted, and we thought we better actually check in with the council before we just go ahead and do it. Every 3 years, we get a chance to renew our participation in the Community Development Block Grant process. And you might recall, this was a big discussion that happened 3 years ago to decide once the city becomes over 50,000, it can be a joint agreement city or even a direct entitlement city under the Community Development Block Grant. When we were under 50,000, we were always a consortium participant. So when you're a consortium, all of your federal money goes to King County, and King County allocates it, and you get some of it sometimes, maybe. When you're a joint agreement city, the county still does the majority of the staff work and reporting for the federal government requirements, but the money comes, most of the money comes directly to the city, and then we can allocate it. You're still limited on what you can do with it, but we give it to Arch Housing Trust Fund as a direct grant rather than hoping it comes down to the county. The third option is to get all of the money, but then you have all the reporting requirements. And so what other cities have discovered is you have to staff up quite a bit in order to meet the fairly onerous requirements. So 3 years ago, we chose to be a joint agreement city. That worked very, very well for us. The staff in the department is recommending that we remain a joint agreement city, but that 3 years is actually going to expire before our next council meeting. So if we don't do anything, we just stay as a joint agreement city. So we would have to decide, if the council wants enough information, decide if you want to change that, we could find a way to talk to you all individually. But our recommendation had been to simply retain the next 3 years as a joint agreement city. But we want to make sure you heard about this before it happened.
Thank you. Ms. Sweet?
I move that we retain our relationship as a joint agreement city, CDBG grants.
Yep, second.
Thank you. It's been moved by Councilmember Sweet, seconded by Councilmember Marchione, that we continue as a joint agreement city for the purposes of CDBG participation. Any discussion?
I would like to see the staff memo post hoc.
Absolutely.
On this as to the argument, because I'd like to get it as part of the record.
Oh, we'll do that. So the rest of this PowerPoint had the previous discussion, but I'll make sure you get all that and get the previous memo as to why we made this choice.
Mm-hmm. And I remember it well.
Parks Department and Finance Department and City Manager's Office, we all feel that this is the right thing to do to stay as a joint agreement city. It seems to be the best balance, but I'll make sure we get that to the full council before the deadline, which is in about a week and a half.
The deadline now will be irrelevant after we take the action, but I'd just like to get the analysis and get it on the record.
Thank you. Any further discussion? All right. The question is on the motion. Was moved by Councilmember Sweet, seconded by Councilmember Marchione, to remain a joint agreement city for CDBG participation. Will all those in favor please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say no. Thank you very much. That is approved.
We may not have CDBG.
Thank you. Yes, absolutely.
What are we going to have?
Yep. Thank you.
Okay. So the other topic I have before I get to calendar is... you should all have a copy of the draft retreat agenda, hopefully, sitting at your dais.
Yep.
And a reminder that on June 12th, you have your City Human Services Commission meetings. And so we are starting the retreat later at 11 o'clock, and we're going to try to be out by 3. And we might even be out sooner than that. So what I wanted to highlight is, because this is a special meeting of the council, whatever you have on the agenda is the only thing you can talk about or make decisions on. So our last two items after the break, the capital improvement program preview and the council topics of interest, is not going to be the normal sort of facilitated multiple issues discussion. It's really just a placeholder if there's further discussion that flows from the financial topics. So it's a placeholder that allows you to talk about things if you want to. It's also an opportunity for the council to choose to adjourn early if you feel like you've heard everything you need to hear. So we previously made the decision to go ahead and move all the CIP discussion to the study session. So normally we would have dealt with all the retreat, but there was a study session already set aside at the June 20th meeting for CIP. So part of the reason this retreat can be shorter is we're moving all that topic to the study session. So. So if you have any questions or comments on the retreat agenda.
Questions or comments? Additions? I think we're okay.
Okay, great.
Toby's back for this round.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then any other items to be added to the agenda, the council agenda over the next calendar, excuse me, council calendar?
I see none.
Okay. So that's all I have, Madam Mayor.
Thank you very much. So I believe that we have come to the end of our agenda, and it is 10:03, so we are not going to have any additional items from the audience. So thank you very much for a lot of good work tonight. I had a good time. Have a good night. We're adjourned.
Thank you.